is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And good afternoon, everybody. Chris Brown in for an ill and on the bench John Murphy here on a Tuesday with Donald Jones. This is the John Murphy Show, yes. Presented by Napa Auto Parts. And, you know, Tuesday, we're trying to turn the page here a little bit, kind of get ready for the Colts, which we will do. Through the course of this afternoon on the show, 803-0550 to join us, as always. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you come off of that game, and I know I was in here with you guys a little bit to talk about it yesterday, but you come off of that game, and you want to reset the table. But, man, you think about the injury list yesterday, and there's a lot of uncertainty there as to who's going to be up, who's going to be down, including the quarterback. And it's hard to kind of get a handle on the kind of team the Bills are going to put on the field.
We have no clue.
Going into this game that they've got to have, because they've pretty much got to win at least three out of the next four. I know a lot of people are already chalking up the New England game in New England in a couple of weeks as a loss, right or wrong. I understand why fans do that and project, but as Murph loves to say, it's a week-to-week league,
Donald. It is a week-to-week league. You know, it's interesting. Well, first of all, I'd like to say, you know, in basketball, I think the sixth man is sometimes more important than the starters, you know? And I think you're playing the role of the sixth man right now.
Me?
Yes.
Why is it on me? Wait a second.
Because
I just cover what happens. I don't make it happen.
No, I'm just saying. Murph is, you know, he's down.
Oh, I see. For the show you're talking about.
For the show, yeah.
Okay, I thought you were talking about, you know,
Sunday's
game. I was like, where
am
I? I'm going to be in the press box watching
the sixth man.
Watching what's going on. Okay.
Sixth man.
Well, I appreciate that.
Sixth man of the year. There's an award for that.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I've been the sixth man enough. You know, Murph would have to be sick a significantly longer period of time. Not that we want that.
Right.
But, yeah, for true sixth man consideration.
I guess so.
But we wanted to start the show and set the table with, and we've got a full show today, and we'll get into that in just a second. But we wanted to set the table with what I felt, and we kind of, you know, married heads here or put our heads together to try to come up with something that was interesting. And I think the part of this team that has really got Bills fans flummoxed, perplexed, use any 50-cent word you want here, is the offense and what has happened to it through the course of the season. There were times where it looked pretty good. There were times where it really struggled. It's really been a roller coaster on offense for this football team. And now we're three quarters of the way through the season, and I still don't believe anybody has a firm grasp of just what this offense is, other than inconsistent, unfortunately.
Right.
So we said, all right, well, what can we do to address this and let the fans interact and really kind of try to get a handle as we move forward? I think we know that the offense has been stuck in neutral for the better part of the last three, four, 5 weeks, however long we want to stretch it. And there have been times where we say, oh, that was a good series. Oh, that was a good series. And then other parts, it's like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
When is it going to change? And I think we're at the point in the season now, knowing you need wins and probably some help, where this offense needs some jumper cables.
Mm-hmm.
Let's you know, put the negative on first so you don't get shocked, then put the positive on the red side, and then let's jump this thing because it needs a jolt.
Yeah.
It needs a shot in the arm, whatever cliche you want to use. It needs something. And what can you give it this late in the season to make a difference? That's kind of our Twitter poll today. What is going to serve as the jumper cables for the Bills offense? And we've got some interesting choices for fans to choose from today on our Twitter poll. And if we take a look at it, the first choice is pretty obvious. It's Kelvin Benjamin. You want to talk about a big jump? Let's put a 6'5" guy on the field, you know, as option one. Colts defense. Which kind of sounds silly, but when you think about it, the Colts have given up more points than any other team in football. You want to help an offense? I like that.
Yeah.
I like going against a 32nd-ranked defense in terms of points allowed. and their cornerback situation is a complete mess right now.
Right.
I think the four healthy cornerbacks that the Colts have four games of NFL experience combined. Mm. So they've got a lot of guys injured in their secondary at the corner position, so that could be a good thing for the Bills' wide receiving corps. So I don't think that's an option that should be dismissed. More creativity is something that I think a lot of fans like to see. Last week, you know, with Joe Webb running some wildcat, they even had some different formations out there. There was one where they had Travaris Cadet and Shady on the field at the same time, which really forces defenses to worry about the matchups in addition to the receivers they had out there. And then we have the all-too-famous other.
Right.
And right now leading the way is the return of Kelvin Benjamin. We don't know that that's going to happen for sure, although Coach did say he is optimistic that Benjamin will get back on the practice field today and be, you know, working his way back, hopefully into the lineup. And even Kelvin, when he talked in the locker room last week, said, you know, I pretty much chalk up the fact that I'm going to probably miss a couple of games here and then be back. Well, that would be the last two games, Chiefs and Patriots. Mm-hmm. So if he's got it in his head that he's missing two games, he's probably also got it in his head that he's going to be back for this week's game. Obviously, a lot can change between now and Sunday, but it looks as though he's going to get back on the practice field at the very least, and then you hope things go well. And that's why I was disappointed last week that he couldn't play, because he actually played against the Patriots earlier this season with Carolina,
mm-hmm.
had four catches for 104 yards. That would have been nice to have last
right,
Sunday.
Right, exactly. You know, for me, as you talk about the identity, you talk about the identity of this offense and really of the team, I think the identity of the team is they have to play strong defense, and they might, you know, score a touchdown or two, but they're going to win the game. But strong defense, couple of touchdowns, if that, and some field goals. I think that's the real identity of the team. The offense doesn't really have an identity, because you have one week where LeSean McCoy, you know, they can get some things going and they'll go for, you know, 101, something like that, rushing, some, you know, something right above 100 yards or right around 100 yards. You'll have another game where you'll get some things moving in the passing game. You never have a crazy yards in terms of passing game. You never have that type of day. But, you know, you'll have certain days where Tyrod might hit six or seven wide receivers or something like that, you know, and it's like, oh, man, okay. You're trying to get some things going. You never really had that one thing that you can hang your hat on this year. Not yet this year, where you could say, all right, we know they're going to run the ball effectively. That's what we thought was going to be the case going into the season. Wasn't the case. So you haven't had week in and week out one thing that you know this offense is going to be able to do. We all know that this team wins games with strong defense and, you know, a couple of field goals and maybe a touchdown or something like that. So with all of that being said, we also know the times that they play defenses that aren't the strongest this year, they kind of, you know, had better days on offense. You know, when you talk about Tampa, Oakland, even though they had a bunch of turnovers, they've had some better days against those teams. And so with that being said, I would have to go with, in terms of this Twitter poll, I'd have to go with the Colts defense. And it being so bad, that's going to help jumpstart this Bills offense with Kelvin Benjamin in or out of the lineup. I don't even know how effective Kelvin Benjamin will be, you know, with that injury. How effective is he going to be? He's already right. Not the fastest guy, you know, so if he's really in pain out there, and, you know, will he be in and out of the lineup, you know, every other play because he, oh man, that hurt a little bit, let me come out for a play, something like that. Is he going to be on a pitch count, you know?
Right.
So I think for me, I'd have to go with the Colts defense not being a strong defense at all. That's going to help, you know, jumpstart this offense. It's going to help jumpstart this running game. And then that will help out in the passing game as well, as so you talked about those corners.
So your choice is based almost solely on the fact that Benjamin's availability is still up in the air.
Yeah, I think his and I think even if he's available for Sunday, I don't think he's going to be truly effective, you know, because you're talking about, what, a couple weeks removed from, you know, his knee injury. And so I don't know how effective he is really going to be in this game. I think the fact that their defense isn't that good, this Bills offense better be able to get something going against that defense.
Well, I mean, you look at what the Indianapolis defense has done this year. They've played 12 games, and in 10 of them, they've given up 20 points or more.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody has given up more points than them, as we mentioned. And just looking at some of their numbers, I mean, they're just not pretty at all. Giving up almost 110 yards a game on the ground, 271 yards through the air, which I think speaks to the problem that they're having in stopping the pass. You look at their sack total, I mean, outside of Jabal Sheard, they really don't have anybody that can get to the passer. They've had injury problems on offense and defense. Obviously, Andrew Luck is out for the year. His shoulder never got right to get back on the field this season, and that set them back right from the get-go. You know, Jacoby Brissett has had some nice games here and there, but keeping that offense on the field has been a problem. And Frank Gore looks like he is finally starting to slow down.
Right.
I mean, he's only averaging about 3.5 yards a carry behind an offensive line that has grossly underachieved as well. Jacoby Brissett is the most sacked quarterback in football. Yeah. So there are a lot of things across the board that have gone wrong for the Colts. But as far as the Bills' offense is concerned, this Colts' defense could be just what the doctor ordered. 803-0550, let us know what you feel could serve as the jumper cables for the Bills' offense this week. Is it Kelvin Benjamin coming back to the lineup potentially? Is it the Colts' defense? Or is it a couple of these other choices that we've given you? I think the creativity angle is an interesting one. I mean, we heard Coach Dennison talk yesterday about some of the things that he put into the game plan, namely Joe Webb as a Wildcat quarterback being number one.
Right.
That was obviously the most noticeable one. One that was a little less noticeable was his choice to throw once he got into goal-to-go situations, an area of the field that in self-scouting he discovered he runs a great deal of the time. I think it's up over 80% Bills running in goal-to-go situations. And it's hard to argue there have been results there when they've run the football down in there. They've been able to reach the end zone and score six as opposed to settling for three. But he decided in this game, in an effort to keep New England on their heels, I'm going to throw the ball more, which he even did late in the game when Peterman was playing quarterback. I mean, they threw three times on the one-yard line down there. What was it, two fade balls to Zay Jones? I can't remember what the play was in between. I think it was another play to Zay, but he was coming across the back of the end zone there, and they didn't connect three times. I felt that was a lot to put on a rookie quarterback and a rookie receiver in a scoring situation. Granted, the game is probably in hand already for New England, but still in all, maybe mix something else in there to kind of give them at least the threat of the run. It's not like time on the clock was a concern, where if you run the ball and you don't get in and the clock runs, it's no big deal. But yeah, I mean, I'm all for another dose of creativity here, because there's not a lot of the conventional offense that seems to be working consistently for them right now. But the question for you is, how far can that really take you? I mean, maybe it gets you a score.
Yeah.
And that's great, because they're starved for points.
Mm-hmm.
How far can you take that?
I don't think you can take it that far. You know, like you said, it's going to get you a touchdown maybe if you connect on it. God, I wish Joe Webb would have connected with Javaris Cadet, you know, on that pass. That would have been very good for this team, as getting some momentum in your way, you know, going your way. Maybe he would have scored or something like that. They already had the drive going with the big 27-yard by Joe Webb, run by Joe Webb. So I'm all for, you know, being creative, and, you know, I guess that was a trick play. I don't know if you consider that a trick play. Joe Webb has played some quarterback in this league, you know.
Right.
So I don't know if you consider that a trick play, but just really just being creative in the offense and doing a couple of different things that teams haven't seen you do before, you know, and maybe that helps out. But that's not – you still have to be able to run your base offense. You still have to be able to execute, you know, our running game, execute the passing game, you know, execute the normal plays that you have been running since way back in the spring. And if you can't do that consistently, it's going to be hard to put up points. You might get a touchdown out of some creativity, but that can't be your full game plan. Even I think back to like Boise State and those teams, you know, they would run one, two, maybe three types of creative plays throughout the course of a game. Now they executed those plays well.
They ran a handful in that bowl game against
Oklahoma.
Right. Statue of Liberty.
And they executed them well, you know, and it helped them get that win. But ultimately, throughout the course of the game, you need to be able to run your base offense.
Right. No, I agree, and that's been a problem. Because outside the first possession, which was really good at keeping New England on their heels, they just couldn't sustain things, string positive plays together back to back to back to back. I mean, they had trouble stringing two positive plays together you know, more than four or five times in that ball game. And then you're not on the field. Then your defense is on the field longer. Then they get worn out trying to hold. And, you know, kudos to the defense. I mean, first team in the league this season to hold the Patriots to less than 13 points by halftime. I mean, it's a game. It's a one-score game at halftime. And the offense just couldn't sustain it. They've got to turn the page. They've got to find new answers. Coach Dennison's got to try to come up with something, because I think they do have to throw some – see how the game unfolds in the early stages. But I would have a contingency plan there with maybe a package of plays to really throw the Colts off base there. But then you look – I mean, you run down the numbers, though, of this Colts defense, and you got to think to yourself, we got to be able to do something against these guys, just based on the inexperience, the fact that they're last in the league against the pass. They've given them more points than any other team in football. And I mean, you go down the list, there's some ugly numbers here. 29th in total defense, 31st in yards per play, last in passing yards allowed. I mean, they're 30th in – I mean, they don't get to the quarterback, 30th in sacks per play on defense. So they don't get any pass pressure on your quarterback. They're not good against the pass. They're woofully inexperienced due to injuries. I mean, I'll take a look at the red zone defense when I get a chance, but this is a defense where you got to believe you're going to be able to make some hay even with your base offense.
Even with the base offense. And the biggest question really right now is, obviously, it's the elephant in the room, in the building, in Western New York. Who's going to be the quarterback this week? You know,
because well, due to injury, because Coach said when healthy, it'll be Tyrod. But we don't know where Tyrod's going to be come Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Exactly. You know, so with all of that being said, not knowing if he's going to be healthy enough to play this week, and you have to go with Nate Peterman, how creative can you be with the rookie quarterback in? You know, and so it's not like you have your normal quarterback who's been in all year and you can do some different things that you haven't done because he's used to running this stuff. If it is Nate Peterman, you're talking about putting a rookie quarterback out there.
Right.
You don't want to throw too much at him. Now, this would be a game that you could say, okay, you got a if it is Nate Peterman, you could say, okay, you got a rookie quarterback in against probably the worst defense in the league. You know, so you have something going in his favor, you know, that can help get this thing going. But how creative do you want to be if it is Peterman with the rookie quarterback?
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us. Let us know what you feel could serve as the jumper cables for the Bills offense this week against the Colts. Is it Kelvin Benjamin coming back to the lineup potentially? Is it the Colts defense? Do they need more creativity in the scope of their offense, similar to what we saw last week, which got them a few positive plays? Or is it something else entirely? Maybe it's keying on featuring somebody else in the scope of the offense.
Right.
I mean, some people might say, well, duh, that's going to be Benjamin when he comes back. It may very well be, but maybe there's a matchup that you like based on the fact that you've got four corners for the Colts that really haven't had a lot of time on the field in the NFL. Maybe you can use one of your veteran players. Maybe Jordan Matthews can win consistently, you believe, against whoever their slot corner might be. And that's a high percentage play. Maybe you like Charles Clay against one of their safeties, and you like that matchup, and you want to feature that. I don't know where you go. You know, I'm not the guy that's got to devise these X's and O's or come up with a competent game plan. But to me, I think you've got to find a matchup that you like and key on that, especially if we've got Peterman starting a quarterback this week because Tyrod's not healthy enough to go. You'd like to give Peterman the comfort that we're going to win on these matchups this week. Here's the guy I want you looking for. Maybe he's your first option in 75% of the pass plays you're going to call in your game plan.
You know, it's interesting because as bad as this defense, as we went through the numbers, as bad as the defense is, I mean, they are top 15 in terms of rushing average against them, right? So they're not giving up, you know, too much yards rushing. They're not giving up big chunk plays and things like that consistently. Everything else is bad. And when you talk about these four corners that they have going this week, combined how many games that they've started?
Four.
Four, right? And four corners have combined four games started, you know.
There's a lot of inexperience back
there. Right, exactly. So you'd have to think that the coaches say, okay, we have to test those corners. We have to use our veteran receivers and rookie, you know, and Zay Jones, who has now played basically a full season. You have to use these guys and Charles Clay, put him out there, put LeSean McCoy out there, and if he ends up on one of those corners, you have to test those guys. You're not going to put the entire game on the quarterback's shoulders, regardless of who the quarterback is, if it's Tyrod, if it's Nate Peterman, because that's not this offense. But when we pass the ball, we need to test those corners, all right? We need to take some shots down the field. We need to do some creative things out there because that is the matchup that you want, you know? And football is a game of matchups. You find the weakest link on their team, and that's what you exploit. That's what the Patriots have been doing forever, and that's what the Bills need to do.
Right, and you look at the Colts defense, just kind of crunching some more of their numbers. They're number one in the league in first down defense against the run. They don't give up running plays of 4 yards or more on first down. They're like number one in the league there, and people are like, ooh, they can stop the run. It's like, no.
Yeah.
It's because everybody's throwing on first down.
Yeah.
They're like, why am I going to run for 4 yards when I can get 12 to 15
mm-hmm.
with a pass?
Yeah.
Everybody is throwing against this team because they know they can't stop the pass. They don't have a pass rush, and they don't have corners who can cover.
Right.
And for an offense that really had trouble getting separation last week against New England, I expect to see far greater separation this week against this secondary. Am I wrong to expect that?
You have to expect that. And to be honest with you, the whole not getting separation thing is interesting to me. You know, I mean, this is something that they've really been dealing with all year, not truly being able to get one-on-one separation. Now, you have plays where guys come open, but – wide receivers consistently winning one-on-one matchups. That's something you have to be able to do in this league.
Right.
If you can't do it, well, it's hard to play offense in this league.
Well, and you saw what Dennison did to try to combat the fact that that wasn't happening. He ran some stack formations. He ran some bunch formations, which is usually what you do to try to get some separation for guys who can't get it, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what you do because getting separation, number one, you got to get off the line of scrimmage. You know, and so you run those stacks and bunches so that you have guys, it allows them to go in a bunch of different ways, you know, number one. Number two, you don't have to necessarily get off that bump and run coverage right away, which is something that some of these receivers have had trouble with this year.
Right.
And then just being able to work with each other within a bunch or within a stack helps you create separation. When you have to do it one-on-one, that's why X is a lot of times the number one receiver lines up by itself, you know, so that
right. He
is the one guy that can continuously separate from the defense, from anything that you're trying to do to him. That is something that this team has had trouble doing all year. This week, they need to be able to create separation against these corners that have no experience. You have receivers that have experience now, so you should be able to create some separation.
Next question for you with regard to separation. How much – obviously we've seen the offensive coordinator try to help his receivers based on alignment, schematics, to generate more consistent separation so that more completions and pass plays can be made. Beyond that, how much can separation improve – from a technique perspective, because I remember talking to Lee Evans a long time ago, and he said being a successful wide receiver in the NFL isn't solely predicated on speed. And he was a fast player.
Right.
He said, because you're not going to run every route the same speed. You're not going to play an entire game at the same speed. You want to change it up to throw the defensive back off. So the question here is the separation that's been sorely lacking through the course of this season by this receiving core, how much of it can be improved through technique and personal improvement?
Right.
What are we talking about here? What level of improvement can we expect by guys taking ownership and saying, I want to make this route sharper so I can get that separation I need to help my quarterback out?
We're
three quarters of the way through the season now. We haven't seen it.
What
are we talking about here?
What's
realistic?
Hard to do right now because – you've been playing it this way all year. You know, you've been running comebacks, running hitches the same way all year. So it's hard to really switch up.
Well, they are what they are is what you're telling me.
They are what they are right now.
Oh, boy.
You know, when you get into the offseason and you can really go and train with other receivers, then you can really learn different things. I remember going to watch Larry Fitzgerald, you know, and watching him change speeds and do different things, which helps him create because he's not the fastest player at all. You know, and that's what Lee Evans was talking about. It's not about being faster than everybody else. Everybody's fast out there on the field. You have to be able to change your speeds. You have to do different things with your eyes, with your head, you know, with your shoulders, different things to help create separation. If you're a big physical receiver, learning how to lean on a guy, you know, and come out of that break without extending your arms, that can help you, you know. And so there's a lot of different ways that you can make it happen for you. You know, you just have to learn it, and it's going to take really a full offseason for these guys to figure that out. You can't do it in 1 week. It's hard to do. I don't know if I think this week with the inexperience at corner that they're going to face, they probably will create some separation. But moving forward, you're not going to face that type of inexperience at corner week in and week out, you know. And so you have to be able to do different things to create separation on your own.
Let's go to the phones real quick, 803-0550 to join us. Ron in Lackawanna, what is going to serve as the jumper cables for the Bills offense? Ron, what do you got for us?
I got a couple of things I want to bring up. First of all, how about because their defense is so inexperienced, how about misdirection plays, maybe screen plays, even a screen to the tight end. If you put two tight ends out there, a screen play to a tight end, stuff like that. And another question, because they know we're not throwing the ball downfield and they stick the line of scrimmage, the defense does, don't you think that's on us because our guys ain't better, our receivers don't hand-to-hand combat better at the line of scrimmage, and because they know we're not going to throw the ball downfield, that they has a lot to do with it?
So Ron, thanks for the call. So he's talking about squatting on routes.
Yeah. Now I will say this.
I haven't tried to make a point of looking for that. I don't know if you have. Or...
The only time I look for that is when Nate Peterman is in at quarterback, and that is because he gets the ball out so fast.
Right.
You know, when a DB knows that you like to get that ball out fast, they're going to squat on everything, you know,
right.
Because they know, all right, 3-step, he's coming out with the ball. 5-step, he's coming out with the ball. And so as soon as he hits that back step, he's coming forward. He's usually throwing that ball. You know, he almost threw another interception this past weekend because he throws it. And even Tony Romo pointed it out. When you have a quarterback that just wants to get it out of his hands so fast, guys squat on those routes. You know, they jump that stuff. If you have an aggressive corner, he is going to jump it. I don't care if he's a rookie. He's going to jump it, you know, and live with the fact that, coach, he throws it fast. The coaches talk about that. Look, you might get an opportunity to jump a route this week because this quarterback likes to get it out of his hands so fast. So, I haven't looked at it really with Tyrod, you know, but when you have receivers that aren't traditionally or consistently creating separation, you will get corners or DBs that will sit on routes, you know, and that also goes into down and distance. You know, if it's 3rd and 10, typically you're running a route at the sticks, and so corners will sit at the sticks, you know, and so you'll get guys jumping routes or sitting on routes at that moment. Sitting on routes is really like a down and distance type of thing.
All right, fair enough. We've got a jam-packed show for you today, folks. Coming up in our next segment, we will have the one, the only Kyle Williams joining us here in studio. Talk about a few things, not only with the state of the Bills, but also some of the things that are coming up this weekend at the home game against the Colts on Sunday. We also have our Player of the Week winner, Trey Wingo, later on in the show, along with Wall of Famer Steve Tasker. Jam-packed show for you here on Tuesday. It's Chris Brown in for John Murphy, along with Donald Jones here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
More of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show. Chris Brown in for John Murphy along with Donald Jones. And we'll get to our special guest in just a moment. Time now for New York Lotto Inside the Numbers. In his 163rd game in a Bills uniform, Kyle Williams' first half sack against the Patriots increased his total to 42.5, the most by a Bills defensive tackle in team history. New York State Lottery Inside the Numbers. Take a break from the expected, play scratch-off games from the New York Lottery. And how about that for a segue, as we now welcome into studio Bills defensive tackle Kyle Williams, who is on somewhat of a media tour today.
Yeah, he is.
Have we gotten you the John Thompson towel to wipe your brow for all this work you've been putting in?
I've got it going on today.
Did you put makeup on? Huh? I know you did something earlier. Did you put some makeup on?
I put my makeup on every morning when I get up, so I stay ready, so I don't have to get ready.
So you don't have to get ready.
Yeah, you know
well,
how
you
it
know,
is.
16-game season, 163 games. The math breaks down. That's a lot of years, man. It sounds like you're getting a little old.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I have basically had 2 years off with 2 blown Achilles. So, I mean, those are basically just vacation years. So I'm ready to go.
Bionic Achilles.
Yeah, that's right. 2 years in the bank. I'm good to go.
Let's get the first part of why you're here squared away. and I think they picked probably a pretty good person for this. But it is family day this Sunday at the stadium for Bills Colts. And why not pick the guy who's
can fill
got
up
a gaggle of kids?
That can fill up right? half the seats with my crew, right? Yeah. No, I think it's going to be awesome. They're going to have an opportunity to come in the indoor and do a lot of different activities. And I think there's going to be real reindeer and a Santa Claus and a synthetic skating rink. They're
really?
You know, kind of going
real
off.
Reindeer?
That's the rumor. That's okay. The rumor. I think you have to show up to find out for sure.
Okay.
But I'm actually going to ask Sean if I can have the day off and play with the reindeer
that's
rather than play.
About.
So
you're not bringing anything from the arms case though to might lace.
No, not here. You know, they're a little more lax on gun laws back in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Get away with that, not up here.
Yeah, my folks live in South Carolina, and it's the same thing. It's like the Wild West down there. You don't need a concealed
it's
weapons license.
Right,
you can have a gun in your glove compartment or your car. It doesn't. I was
man.
Like, what?
Yeah.
They don't even
yeah,
have
so
helmet
somebody,
law down
yeah.
there. For,
somebody down there tells you don't touch my car. Don't touch the car.
Okay.
Yeah, don't touch the car.
Yeah, good to know.
Yeah.
All right. So have your are your kids going to be – I mean, they're still all into the whole Christmas thing, right? I mean, they're still
yeah. And watching the show as they should be into Christmas. It's the most magical time of year.
That's right.
You know, you don't want to be that guy that's always going to be in our family where you
– Right. How, you know. Now, you know, you've been growing the beard for a while here, Kyle. Are we trying to be seasonal with this? Or what was the aim, the main aim here? Because this is
–
you're at a length now that requires some maintenance.
General laziness is –
Oh, okay.
You know, the top.
Right. Fair enough.
I went to get some of the wild hairs out of it a couple of weeks ago, and the sweet woman who cuts my hair got a little carried away. So,
because there's beer wax, you got to use wax and stuff to really kind of get this thing.
I don't use that. Some may. This is all natural.
Do you dress up as Santa?
No, but I'm working my way towards that. You know, a few more years, this little bit here is going to be the whole thing.
Turning, yeah,
yeah. Say, yeah, you might not even.
You know,
have
you have some rough kids, so you might as well ask. Sean.
Did you say I have rough kids?
Rough, like I've seen them out there playing, and they are
they're rough on each other. I know that.
Exactly.
I've witnessed that.
The boys are rough.
Yeah,
your daughter can hold her own though. I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
right, the
younger daughter. Yeah, she's pretty.
she's got some spunk.
Yeah, she's that's a good word for her.
Does she get away with it because she's so young? She can be rough on everybody else, and you know, if they do something back, you're like, "What are you doing? That's your little sister."
Well, she's actually older, so I encourage her. I mean, she's fine; she can get away with it. Mm-hmm. She can hold them down, shove their head in the mud. The boys don't touch her. Don't touch the girls.
Yeah. Now I know. Also, this weekend there's a giveaway for fans coming in, and you guys get to put the red on, right?
Yeah, Color Rush, fan appreciation's coming up. So, obviously, I think you guys have heard me talk about at length. And if you've been around long enough, you know how much that, you know, I love our fans and how I think they're, you know, just vitally important to what we do. And I'm so appreciative of, you know, 12 years of here playing for these people, playing for this organization. So, obviously, fan appreciation's coming up. It, you know, means a lot. And we're going to be red on red on red.
And you got I think fans are getting scarves on the way in this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I think so. So we're going to have lots of
red
rolling.
Which might be good
with
some of the weather we got coming in here. You got to be pretty fired
good.
Up to be playing
yes.
a dome team
I want it
with that kind of weather.
As soon as we kick off the first game, it can be as cold as it wants. Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah.
Because there is an advantage there. I mean, you know, you got a team that plays at least 8 games in a dome. You know, they even play down in Houston once a year for them. Being in the AFC South. So that's 9 games arguably inside because they got that roof closed in Houston almost every time you go
down.
Yeah,
you know, I guess the only thing that could be tricky with Indy is they do have the option of going outside and practicing in a little inclement or cold weather.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, I mean, if you really wanted to nitpick, I guess you could say.
I don't know how much you've dug down into the Colts tape just yet. You're probably just getting started on that now. You faced Brissett last year as a wet behind the ears rookie in New England. And you guys had no problem handling him. Have you seen – I don't know how you can even speak to this yet, depending on how much film you've seen, but have you seen strides in his game now that he's starting week after week after week?
Yeah, well, totally different game plan and offense of what he's going to be trying to do. They were being very protective of him when we went to New England last year, you know, running some option things and some different things like that. I mean, he's basically had a full year, I mean, give or take, basically being a starting quarterback in Indy. I started on him yesterday. As soon as we're done here, you know, Monday afternoon, I kind of get started. So, you know, I see a lot of good things from him. Obviously, he's mobile. He's got a strong arm. Very tough to bring down. You see some
big
guys
guy.
Getting around. He's a big guy. He's strong, and he's elusive. So, you know, getting pressure on him isn't always, you know, the end of it. You know, you really have to wrap him up and put him on the ground.
What about the running game at Frank Gore? What have you seen?
I mean, how can you not love Frank Gore? You know, the guy's just a warrior. I mean, he's been at it for such a long time. He's still productive. He's tough. Downhill, always seems to find the little seam in the defense. Wherever the little breakdown is, he seems to find it, which is really aggravating but fun to watch, too, at the same time.
It looks like your guy's pass rush kind of rediscovered itself. You know, the last week and even the week before a little bit, you got after Alex Smith some. You know, the guys on the back end did a good job disguising, giving
him
time to
get home.
I think
anytime you pass rush and coverage go together, the same way coverage and pass rush go together, and both of those are really good if you can get a guy to hold the ball for a tick longer. You know, it can make all the difference. I mean, non-pressure is a pressure when he holds it. A pressure is a hit, and a hit's a sack. You know, and a lot of times all it takes is, you know, just – a quarter second longer. So that's kind of where we are. And if we continue to marry those two things together, we'll be fine.
Did you feel like something has clicked in here these last couple of weeks, knowing that long stretch that you had where it was kind of tough for you guys to force a guy to hurry a throw? Or I mean, you were getting some hits here and there, but they were kind of sporadic through that tough
stretch.
Well,
I think,
you
too,
had.
You're looking at different game plans and different quarterbacks and different offenses. So there's a lot that goes into it. You know, obviously we're going to prepare and get ready the best way that we can.
Yeah.
I'm always going to look in the mirror and say, hey, you know, what can I do better? I always grade myself on everything. Hey, that was pretty good. The ball's just gone. Or, okay, you may get double teamed. Hey, you need to do this on a double team. Or, hey, you know what, Kyle? In that situation, if you get a one-on-one and he's holding the ball for more than 2.4 seconds, you have to do better. You have to get there. So there's situations like that all over. And, you know, just try to tell guys, encourage guys, always evaluate it that way and what can you do to get better.
Kyle Williams in studio with us here on the John Murphy Show. Donald, what do you got for
with the absence of, you know, in the past, you've had some guys, some real talent, not that you don't have talent on the defensive line with you now, that would see some double teams, you know, especially a guy like Marcel. With the absence of him, is this the most double teams you've seen throughout your career?
Well, I would think that, you know, when we had all those guys in there, you really couldn't, you know, maybe draw a bead on one, especially when we, you know, I think the year we all had, you know, 10-plus sacks, we had 50-something sacks. And, you know, and when Marcel was here, he and I, a lot of times we would split them. You know, it would always come out pretty close, like, hey, you know what? I got this many one-on-ones, and then you took them, and we kind of took advantage of our opportunities. You get double-teamed as part of the game, but, you know, at the same time, everybody gets it sooner or later. I don't care how much I get it or how little I get it. I got to figure out a way to be better, to defeat it myself or to help my teammates understand, hey, this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. Here's how we can beat this kind of protection.
Yeah, because Jerry's been getting some of those too.
Jerry going to get a lot of chips, and you get center slide with a guard and a center, and Jerry gets some chips. And we just know that, hey, what we talk about in our meeting rooms is, you know, we can pause the tape and it's like, okay, here, there's a double here and a double here. You're by yourself, and maybe you're by yourself, or maybe sometimes there's only one one-on-one. It's like you're the guy that has to make it happen.
Right.
You know, I know in a fight, if two people jump on you, you got to take one out. You take one out, and then maybe you can get the other one in a double team. Is it the same way? How do you beat a double team?
You try to get them on different levels. So you try to split them to create some vertical separation in them, and that way you can work your hip in and do some different things. And for the most part, it means just being relentless and staying busy until they allow me to start, you know, kind of throwing some throat chops in there where I can really eliminate somebody.
Ranger chokehold.
Yeah. So it just – there's technique involved, there's effort involved, and there's help from your teammates.
It looked like on your sack on Brady – because you walked, what is it, Tooney? I don't know how to say his last name, but you walked him back, and it was pretty late in your rush that you pulled him past you and shed him to get to Brady. And again, that goes back to the coverage that you're talking about. But what was happening there that you finally were able to get?
Well, what it is you know, a lot of times we have power rushes and we have long arm or, you know, whatever it is. And a lot of times, if you get those guys reeling, You just kind of stick the pedal to the metal and you keep going. And when sometimes they reel, and then you'll see them, you'll feel them more than anything, try to sit down or put their foot
in
the ground.
In,
and then you can kind of, we call it apex them.
Yeah.
You know, use their weight against them and put them down.
Slam over them.
Yeah, so I hit him. He's going back. I felt him try to sit down, and when he sat down, I just apexed him.
That's when you
him.
Went to the swim. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because that was – and then you point to the side. Are you just pointing to your bench saying, I got you guys? Like, what was that whole thing, or was that just very
Chris,
spontaneous?
You know, you don't need to know everything that's going on.
Well, I don't need to know
maybe
what you said.
Maybe it was some sign language, a secret,
yeah,
you know?
Okay.
Maybe it was something like that.
You and Brady have faced each other a lot, obviously, as long as you've been here facing them twice a year. When you get to them, is there any words, you know, said between you guys?
There have been in the past, but, you know, there's – Not a whole lot at that juncture of the game. We spoke before he came in and pulled me aside, talked to me before the game. We spoke after the game, but during the game, a lot of times we're so focused on what's going on next play kind of thing. But every once in a while, there's something said, and it's typically not good for TV or radio.
I have a question for you, and this might be a little bit philosophical, but since you've spent the time in the league that you have, player development once players get here. It seems like there is a steeper learning curve now due to the divide between the college game and the pro game. Maybe not necessarily at your position per se, as maybe some others like quarterback or wide receiver where guys aren't running the route tree, or even offensive tackle where guys are in two-point stances the whole game in college, and they don't know how to put their hand on the ground. How much more important is it for there to be that teaching element for coaching staffs in the NFL now, in light of this divide that seems to be widening ever more between college and pro?
I feel like you're trying to get me to say we should have more practice time.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying from a pure teaching perspective, because a lot of times, you go back 15, 20 years, guys get to the pros, and you show them a few things about how things are done here and how you got to win with technique because everybody's good. But it almost seems like there's more remedial stuff. There's more remedial stuff you almost have to teach players now when they get here.
I think it kind of comes back to the their reps and their quality reps. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
So what we'll do, or what I'll do a lot of times in the defensive line room, whether it's a Adolphus Washington or if I'm talking to Jerry or, over the years, with Marcel sitting next to me, what are you looking at? Why are you looking there on this down and distance in this formation? And look, do you see this? When you see this, this is how you should play it. And really kind of trying to speed up the game for them. And then when we go out and we do individual and we do things like that, really making sure that you're executing quality reps and you're just not out there
going through
the motions. And obviously this time of year, it can be tough. You've kind of, I've done this individual every day since August. Well, you need to do it. As we see, defensive performance goes up, it goes down. We talked about what? You know what? Maybe our eyes have gotten a little bit out of whack. Maybe our fundamentals have gotten a little bit out of whack. So we hone back in on them, and then you see kind of a spike, a spike in play. So it's like, hey, you know what? Why do we get away from this? Well, maybe we're doing the same reps, but we're not executing them the same way. So it's a grind, and it's tough on you, but, you really try to kind of impress that upon guys that, hey, every rep matters. You got to get something out of it no matter – what time of year it is, what day it is, and how many times we've done it.
I just have the feeling like the challenge is greater on the whole for football teams in general with young players that they want to get on the field at certain positions, maybe more than others, just by virtue of the fact like, oh, we have a first-round pick. He's an offensive tackle. Let's get him on the field right away. Oh, well, he played in a spread attack.
Yeah.
They're in the two-point stance the whole time. We like to run the ball. We can't get him on the field yet. He's not ready, but we need him on the field because he's a talent. And I just feel like there's that push and pull there for a lot of teams in the NFL just because of the divide that exists there.
Well,
I'm going too far down the rabbit
hole.
I think
you're on the right track. But I can also go back to the beginning of my career where the NFL was totally different.
Right.
Where offenses were totally different, where it was run, play action. I mean, we've actually adopted a lot of what you see in college.
Yeah.
I mean,
Because you have to.
Because you have to.
Yeah, but I mean, you have to. But I mean, I think it's come into a spacing game. Like, oh, okay, we're going to get guys in space and basically play basketball where you're going to have to one-on-one the guy and you're going to have to get the guy on the ground, which is one of the most difficult things to do in the game. Mm-hmm. Where when I first came in the league, it was 3 yards in a cloud of dust. It was power. It was lead week. It was play action. You know, it was that type of thing. You still had learning curves there. Sometimes it was more physical, mm-hmm. you know, because of the pounding and the guys are so good. But it all eventually comes back to teaching and technique. Are guys willing to put the time in to learn the technique, to hammer those things down, and you have somebody that's effectively teaching them what they need to know and what they need to learn? Because these guys are so talented. Everybody's so talented. If they're applying themselves to a technique, they'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. You know, they're so physically talented, they'll figure it out.
All right. Well, look, we are out of time. Kyle, we thank you for coming in. We know you had a long day with the media, which, you know, you've always been great with the media, but this might be above and beyond the call of duty today. Nice
job.
Yeah,
this was a long day. You know, you do what you do for
for
everybody, and certain people ask you to do favors.
I'm sure they got a few extra scars for your kids when they hand them out at the game on Sunday. The Color Rush game on Sunday, Bills-Colts, also Family Day, followed by Fan Appreciation Sunday against the Dolphins the following week on this three-game homestand. Kyle, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. Good luck on Sunday and getting a win. It is the John Murphy Show. We're back with more. We should also mention it's time for our Player of the Week, powered by Blue Rock Energy, the official electricity supplier of the Bills. The votes have been piled in, and this week's winning player was LeSean McCoy. Don't forget to keep voting the morning after each game. Go to BlueRockEnergy.com or Blue Rock Energy's Facebook page to learn more. Donald and I back after this on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown in for a under the weather John Murphy, along with Donald Jones here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. I figured, like, I had to. We just had Kyle Williams in studio here in our last segment. I felt like I had to pick his brain. 12 years in the league, I don't know. It just seemed like with the way the college game has changed so dramatically, I just feel like coaching has almost a different set of prerequisites now. You need a coaching staff that can really teach the pro game to a lot of these guys at, you know, some positions more than others. And I just wanted to get his take on that to just kind of see if he has seen that change through the course of his career. Because, like he said, the game has changed dramatically at this level from when he came in 06 to where we are now in 2017.
I don't know if there's another sport that, you know, and obviously I don't know hockey. I don't know other sports. But I know football, basketball, baseball. And I don't know out of those top three. You know soccer, so you can tell me this. Mm-hmm. Out of those top three that I just named, I think football is a sport that changes in terms of scheme, in terms of the type of players that they want, more than any other sport. If you think about basketball, really it's about, okay, do you have a star player? If you have a star player, then you can be effective, you know. If you bring three star players together, then you got a team that's going to go into the playoffs and be okay. Baseball is baseball. It is what it is. Football, it's like you had back in, you know, when he first came into the league, and it was power, you know, a lot of power game, where now you get a lot more spread. You have a lot more mobile quarterbacks in the league than really ever before that I can recall. You have these linemen that are coming out of college, and so you can see the pro coaches now switching things up and running things because, well, this is the way that all of these kids are playing in college, you know, so we can't force all of them to change over at the same time because we'll suck. So it's taking some years to get them to understand this, you know. So we have to adapt somewhat to what the college game is doing. And I think football is the sport that does that the most.
Yeah, because when he said you want to get your players, your playmakers in space and get them in one-on-one situations where they can win, the first person I'm thinking of is LeSean McCoy. And what do they try to do in the run game every time?
Yeah.
They try to clear enough space for him where he gets that one-on-one matchup with the safety, and if he wins, it's a touchdown. Right. Or at the very least, it's a 25, 30-yard play. Unfortunately, there haven't been enough of those this year for the Bills in comparison to the last 2 years.
You know, in the past, in football, and look at the screen game. In the past, you see running back screens, you know. You might every now and then, if a team has a dynamic tight end, you might see a tight end screen. But now, it's like running backs, tight ends, wide receivers, screens all over the field, you know, and they're just trying to get you in one-on-ones everybody in a one-on-one, though. Get the linemen moving. Mm-hmm. You know, you have these more athletic linemen. Get them out in space where they can take on a safety or a corner and just, you know, take them out. And then you get a running back, quarterback, tight end, and all he has to do is make one guy miss, and you're off to the races, you know. So, yeah, football has really changed in the last, you know, 10, 15 years to what it is now.
All right, we've got to take a break and step aside as we are rapidly approaching the top of the hour. But coming up on the other side, ESPN's Trey Wingo will join us from the Golic and Wingo Show, the new combination on ESPN Radio. So we'll talk to him and get his take on some of the happenings in the NFL, including the Gronk hit and subsequent Gronk appeal. We'll also have nuts and bolts from this guy at the bottom of the hour. That's all coming up on the other side here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
Your sports update from One Bills Drive. It's the players' off day here as the coaches install the game plan today for their game against the Colts on Sunday. Offensive coordinator Rick Dennison admitted yesterday there has to be more consistent production on that side of the ball, and while the coaching staff may have a good idea as to who their quarterback will be on Sunday against the Colts, for the rest of us, that situation very much up in the air with Tyrod Taylor not 100%. He's got a knee contusion, according to head coach Sean McDermott. If healthy, McDermott said Taylor will be the starter, but with that knee contusion, again, his status is undetermined heading into Wednesday's practice. Rob Gronkowski is going to appeal his one-game suspension handed down by the NFL for his dirty hit on Tre'Davious White last Sunday after the whistle that left White in the concussion protocol. Gronkowski will meet with Derek Brooks, who is handling the appeal hearing at the league offices in New York today. A decision could be known by the end of the day. Steelers linebacker Ryan Shazier hospitalized last night after suffering a back injury in the Steelers-Bengals game on Monday Night Football that saw him taken off the field on a backboard. The news right now encouraging for Shazier as he's been diagnosed with a spinal contusion and does not need surgery. The feeling has also come back into his legs, and according to doctors, he continues to improve. And the Sabres begin a three-game road trip tonight in Colorado against the Avalanche. Face-off is scheduled for 9 p.m. So that is your sports update from One Bills Drive. Chris Brown in for the under-the-weather John Murphy on a Tuesday here with Donald Jones. And we'll be catching up in just a few moments with ESPN radio host, also host of the NFL Live, which is why we're going to be talking to him. We'll be talking to Trey Wingo, who is on the line with us now, one of the new co-hosts of Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio. He's just a couple of weeks into that gig, in addition to his NFL Live duties. So, Trey, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. It's Chris Brown here filling in for John Murphy along with Donald Jones. How are you?
Good, man. How are you guys?
We're doing good.
We're good. You're the busiest man in entertainment right now.
Yeah, what's your schedule like now? Good Lord.
Just trying to catch a breath every now and then, and we're in the home stretch.
Yeah, well, we are on the heels of Gronkgate here in Buffalo, as you can imagine, since it's been under the microscope since Sunday, and obviously the appeal going on today. What was your take first on the suspension that was levied by the league based on the nature of that instance?
Well, I really thought, I was surprised that it was only a one-game suspension. It was as bad as anything that's happened that I can recall this entire season. You know, whether it was the AJ Green tackle of Jalen Ramsey in Jacksonville, or Mike Evans with a push in the back against Marshon Lattimore. What made this worse to me is that it was clearly well beyond any semblance of a football play. Like, take for example the Monday night game last night between the Steelers and the Bengals, and there were lots of big hits in that game, as you guys obviously know. The hit on George Iloka put on Antonio Brown in the end zone, or the block that Juju Smith-Schuster put on Vontaze Burfict. Now, whether you agree with those flags or disagree with those flags, both of those happen in the context of a play.
Right.
It happened as something was going on. What happened with Gronk and Tre'Davious White, the play was over. He was out of bounds. He had already been touched down, and he's face down on the sidelines, completely defenseless. And he's probably, what, 6 feet, 190 pounds at best.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Gronk, who's 6'5", 6'6", 270, with that padded left arm, you know, like Barry Bonds used to wear in the batter's box all those years when he was stepping into pitches, and just drives his head into the ground.
Right.
We could have had a situation very similar to what happened with Ryan Shazier last night in the Monday night game. So I was shocked that it was only a one-game suspension, because I thought then, if that's the case, sometimes they'll reduce it to one. There is no part of me that sees any way this isn't upheld this afternoon by Derek Brooks.
Yeah, I mean, the thought, I mean, I understand the appeals process and why it's there, because, you know, some guys sometimes are wrongfully accused or levied a punishment that isn't fitting of the crime here. But to me, knowing Mike Evans got a game for the Tampa to New Orleans game that you referenced already, and to see Gronk get a game here, and maybe the league doesn't like to compare infractions and subsequent suspensions that come down afterwards, there's no comparison here for me between those two incidents, just by virtue of the fact as to where Tre'Davious White is now, which is in the concussion protocol, and we know the league's harping on players' safety for so long, concussions chief among them, and here's a guy that does it after the play. I mean, it just doesn't add up for me. I thought it should have been at least two games.
Right.
Yeah, I totally agree with you guys. Look, I will say this. I don't think Gronk is a cheap player. I don't think that it's something he has no prior record of this, and he did apologize afterwards, and all that's great, but it doesn't take away from the severity of the action, which could have been devastating. It is devastating. He has a concussion. It could have been significantly more devastating to Tre'Davious White in his future in the NFL, and it has to be eradicated, and those are the kind of things that the NFL is trying to take out of football. I mean, look, even when Michael Crabtree and Aqib Talib went at it, and I get it, there's history, and they were squaring off against each other.
Right.
This was the complete definition of Tre'Davious had literally no idea what was about to happen to him, and that's what made it so.
Yeah, and they put six rules in the rule book about defenseless players,
exactly.
And here's one at the end after the play.
And those guys got two and appealed that down to one.
I was really surprised, Donald. It wasn't more than that. I really was.
And here's one more thing that I just want to throw in your wheelhouse just to react to about this, and then we'll move on. But Larry Fitzgerald on Westwood One Radio last night, and I'm willing to believe that this could be somewhat taken out of context, but here's an upstanding player that I think has a lot of respect around the league, both in media and amongst players. And in reaction to the Gronk suspension, he says, quote, "I don't particularly like the suspension. I don't like when the actions of one player affects the team. Taking him off the field for a game is going to really hurt the Patriots. I thought he definitely should have been fined heavily. Those kinds of plays really don't have a place in our game. I think the NFL has done a great job of emphasizing that over the last few years, but I don't agree with the one-game suspension." And I'm thinking to myself, Trey, and you can tell me what you think, well, if that's the case, maybe the player should have thought about that before doing the atomic elbow drop on the back of a player's head.
Right.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I love Larry, and he's a good friend of mine, and you know, I have ultimate respect for him. I could not disagree with him more on that front. I mean, look, think about his statement. You know, it's taking away from the actions of the team. Yes, that's the whole point. That's why you need to suspend someone like that, so they understand the gravity of that situation. And when you do something like that, you are hurting the team. It's the same way I believe they went after Talib and Crabtree, because basically they said, the hell with the team, the hell with the coaches, we got a personal beef and we're going to settle it up. And you, that is exactly what you don't want. So for the very reasons that Larry said he didn't like the suspension, I felt the suspension was absolutely warranted.
You know, Trey, it's amazing, and I'm going to move on to a different topic. But before we move on, it's just amazing, because I felt like the league needed to come down hard on Gronk, a name player, big name player throughout the league, so that they don't just open the floodgates to things like that throughout the rest of the year and going into next year, where guys are saying, oh, he only got one game for that. You know, I can take some cheap shots here. Maybe I won't get suspended or something like that. But moving on to the AFC standings right now, and the Bills obviously lost, sitting at 6-6. You had a couple of teams sitting all with the same record. Four teams: Kansas City, the Chargers, the Bills, and the Raiders at 6-6. What do you think? Which team do you feel has the best chance, or looking the best right now, to get up into that playoff spot?
Well, I unfortunately for Buffalo, I do think it's one of those three teams in the AFC West, because one of them is going to win the division. You know, I mean, that's the issue. Buffalo is looking at a wild card route, and they've got Baltimore's ahead of them now. They still have Baltimore's got to play Pittsburgh this weekend, so that may change things a little bit, and especially if the Bills can bounce back this week. But look, if you're asking me of all those teams that are at 6-6, to me, it's any of those teams in the AFC West, because one of them is going to win the division crown, and then the wild card route is going to be what's left for the Bills. And look, it's still a possibility. It is absolutely still a possibility. But it's interesting how quickly things change, guys. We were talking for a couple of weeks about the offense and how the offense was lost, or the defense had been just completely, you know, run over for the three-game stretch. Now the defense for two straight games has played pretty well, and the offense has gone nowhere. So that's sometimes symptomatic of when things are going wrong. You fix one thing, and then something else springs a leak. And that's the biggest issue now, especially with Tyrod beat up as he was in that game. You know, and that was a game, you know, Donald, I know you know this. The games are like a river. You stick a fork in or a piece of wood in it, and suddenly they take on a different path.
Mm-hmm.
And had they been able to get points on that first drive, I mean, the Bills' defense did a good job for most of that game against the high-powered New England offense, but their defense absolutely throttled the offense, and they could get no rhythm going whatsoever.
Yeah, and, you know, looking at the race in the AFC, I think if there's any silver lining here, it's the fact that the Chargers are a hot team right now. Granted, they handed the Bills one of their losses on the Chargers' current winning streak here, but if you're the Bills right now, you want the Chargers to win the AFC West, because the Bills have the tiebreaker over the Chiefs in Oakland by virtue of the head-to-head tiebreaker. So go let the Chargers win the West and then battle out the tiebreakers with a team like Kansas City or Oakland, fully recognizing that Baltimore could also be in the mix there too. I mean, that's kind of what you want to happen, because the Bills are in scoreboard watching mode now.
Yeah, look, you're right, and those are huge things. I mean, I think it was the win over the Raiders that got you guys to 5-2, right? Wasn't that the situation?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And then, of course, we had that three-game losing streak, and it all went crazy. Or four-game losing streak. Or I can't remember.
Three-game
losing streak,
yep.
I think. Yeah. And you bounced back with Kansas City and lost. That's right. So, yeah, look, the Chargers are there. Donald, we've talked about them all season long. They started 0-4, and the Chiefs started 5-0, and now they're tied atop the division. It's just crazy. And the 92 Chargers are the only team in NFL history that ever started 0-4 and made the playoffs, and now they moved to Los Angeles, and they could be repeating that. It's just an unbelievable situation to see how it's playing out.
Trey Ringo with us from ESPN's Golic and Wingo, as well as NFL Live. And, you know, Trey, as rocky as it's been for the Bills of late, the Chiefs are a mess right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they scored points this week, but they lose to the Jets on the road, who can be spectacularly entertaining even in losing the Jets. But the Chiefs, you know, they changed play callers this week to try to put a charge in their offense and eliminate maybe some tendencies, and they score points, but they still can't win.
No, they can't, and you're exactly right. What did they score? 10 points against you guys in the loss to the Bills. You know, that high powered offense couldn't go anywhere. So then they go up and they finally get that fixed as Alex Smith throws for four touchdown passes and has a 70-yard pass as well as a 70-yard run, and they put up 31, and then they make their defense makes the Jets look like the 2013 Broncos as they go up and down the field. How many plays in the red zone did they have on that go-ahead touchdown? Was it 43 after all the penalties?
Yeah,
down
right?
The stretch? It seemed
felt
like that
way.
Yard, it seemed like that yard took forever for the Jets to finally cross. So, you know, Matt Nagy, the offensive coordinator who got the job to make the play calls, I thought looked really good. But then suddenly the defense, which had been the one thing that had been holding Kansas City together, suddenly fell apart. And they have some real, real problems right now. They can't run the ball, and they just seem completely out of rhythm. And they completely melted down. Marcus Peters, you know, threw that penalty flag into the stands at MetLife, and all those fans were taking selfies with the flag. That was the first. I'd never seen the selfie flag.
Yeah, I've never seen that either.
That was pretty entertaining.
That's crazy. You know, I wanted to ask you about the game last night, just to stay in the AFC. One last question. The game last night, a physical game. Obviously, we saw, you know, the hit with Shazier, and it's good to hear that he's doing a little bit better. But after that, it just was like, you know, Wild Wild West, we're going to take some shots out here. And you saw hit after hit, just a physical game. What did you think about that game last night?
Well, you know, a lot of players, a lot of former and current players were talking about it. And, you know, the consensus seemed to be that was not a good – it was not a good night for the National Football League. Forget what happened to Shazier, because that can happen in any play. But that started it. You know, it was the first drive of the game for the Bengals, and you see that happen. And, boy, all you just get sick when you see something like that. And all you can think of is, you know, hey, man, get better, get better. We saw that a few years ago. Was it 2005, 2006 with the Bills tight end? Well, we saw that happen on the kickoff.
Yeah, Kevin Everett, yeah.
Kevin Everett, yeah. And you know, you just are like, please show me that movement. And so that didn't happen, although it looks like things are trending better there. And then these two teams who've had all these issues and all these squabbles before, going back to the playoff game a few years ago, and even after the game when Juju Smith-Schuster was apologizing about the hit on Vontaze Burfict, which, you know, he should have, because he did get him too high in the head. You hear Antonio Brown in the background yelling, karma. It's called karma from that game.
Yeah, when
Burfict knocked him out on the playoff game, I was like, no, nobody wants that. That's not good for anybody.
Yeah, I cringed anybody when I heard that.
Yeah, anybody watching that and hearing that, you say to yourself, would I let my kids play that game? And that's not what we want. We understand there are inherent risks with playing football. It's part of what makes it interesting and entertaining. But it also, you cannot celebrate those kind of things. You cannot emphasize those kind of things. You cannot throw gas on the fire to ignite those kind of things. And that's the biggest thing that for me, came out of that Monday night game.
See, it's so hard, because as players on the field, like and Antonio Brown, when you get cheap-shotted like he did by Vontaze Burfict a couple years ago, you know, it's such a emotional game. You are honestly waiting for the moment that somebody just gets a good shot on him, you know, and you don't want it to be a cheap shot. You don't want him to get hurt, but you are almost waiting for that moment, you know, and it's because you're playing out there, putting your body at harm, and you actually took a cheap shot at me. One day you're going to get yours back. So it's so hard, you know, and us as fans now, we can look at it one way, but when you're on the field, it's looked at so much differently.
Oh, completely. And Donald, just how quickly it's changed, okay? I was talking about this with Golic this morning, who played on that Eagles team that played in the body bag game against the Washington Redskins, I think in the late 80s or early 90s on Monday Night Football, when they sent out all three quarterbacks of the Redskins, and Brian Mitchell had to finish up as the quarterback, who was their running back at that time. And that game is, you know, in air quotes, revered as one of the most unbelievable football games of all time. Well, if that game were played now, the mindset people have watching whether you're fans or players, changes completely because of what we now know. And whether you like it or not, that's the new reality, and that's what we've got to deal with.
Yeah. Trey Wingo with us from Golic and Wingo, NFL Live on ESPN. And, you know, here's a guy that I wanted to get your take on, Trey, just in terms of the league MVP race, so to speak. Everybody talks about Brady. We know Breeze has had a magical season down in New Orleans. Rodgers is kind of out of the mix due to his injury, though he may come back in the next week or two. Kirk Cousins, you know, has his supporters, but the team's not doing well. What about, make the case for me for Russell Wilson, who may not have the classic passer rating number, may not lead the league in completion percentage, but man, this guy he's winning for that team right now.
He certainly is, and I can make the case for him in one statistic that is by far the most impressive stat you will hear, I hope, all season long, okay? The Seattle Seahawks, as a team, have scored 30 offensive touchdowns. Russell Wilson has accounted for 29 of them. 26 touchdown passes and 3 rushing touchdowns. J.D. McKissic, the rookie running back, is the only other player who has an offensive touchdown that doesn't involve Russell Wilson's play. And he's doing it behind an offensive line that is basically glorified chicken wire and saran wrap, okay? He is running for his life on almost every play, and it's working. It is working for him. It is unbelievable. And you would never want to build it that way, and you would never want to rely on it that way, but it's the only resource they have right now, and what he's doing is absolutely magical.
You know, it's another interesting thing is you talk about Brady, you talk about Carson Wentz, Russell Wilson, another guy I believe should be at least in the conversation is Case Keenum, you know, who has the Vikings rolling.
Absolutely, and we had Case actually on the show end of last week, and it's an amazing thing. I mean, you know, Case was a guy that bounced around in this league from the Rams to the Houston Texans, who was just trying to find a roster spot. And in fact, if you look at what the Vikings in general have done, let's be honest, they're on their third-string quarterback, and they're on their arguably their third-string running back this season. And they are finding ways to win, and they've won 8 straight games. And as of right now, because of the loss by the Eagles in Seattle, they hold the number one seed in the NFC. And they might hold it again this week because the Rams are hosting the Eagles this Sunday, and that's going to be a very difficult game for Philadelphia as well. Case Keenum, while we're talking about the hit on by Gronkowski and all the big hits and the questionable stuff that took place Monday night, the play of a guy like Case Keenum, who has come out of nowhere and played at an MVP level, are the kind of stories that should be celebrated in football this season. It's kind of like Jeremy Lin when he was the Knicks point guard. He just sort of took off out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It just came out of nowhere. And, you know, I have no idea whether this will continue for Case Keenum next year, but I guarantee you someone's going to pay him some big money as if it will. So we should just ride this. I mean, the amazing thing about this for me, guys, is every week Mike Zimmer, the head coach, says, well, he's our starter for next week. No, no. He's your starter for the rest of the season, man. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it is not broke with Case Keenum right now, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, and I think if anything hurts him, it's the fact that, well, number one, that he's Case Keenum, and people are like, well, he's been a journeyman. You know, he can't be an MVP. And, oh, his defense is so great in Minnesota, and the defense is what travels for them. It's not, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the guy's making plays.
He's making plays for him.
Yeah, he's playing. He's not a game manager. He is managing above the X's and O's right now. But you're right. The Vikings are the only team in the NFL that have a top five offense and a top five defense, and that certainly helps him in those situations.
Real quick, I don't know if you have information, but Aaron Rodgers, what's the latest you guys are hearing about his availability, whether it's this week, next week, or at all?
Well, according to Chris Mortensen this week, they're going to put him on the they're going to begin the process of taking him off IR, and he's going to run with a scout team this week in hopes that maybe by December 17th, if there's a season to be salvaged, he might be able to play the last two or three games.
Hey, Trey, we have to, like, quickly get off, but I just wanted to ask you about the Ravens. What about this Ravens team? I mean, they put up some points in a 44-20 win over the Lions. Do we see this team as a team that really is going to be in the playoffs, or can they lose a couple of games here moving forward?
Well, they can certainly lose a couple of games starting this week, but look, they're going to have to be their defense. The 44 points was a complete anomaly this season. They are last in the league in passing yards in the NFL, and that's not going to get it done. Whatever they're going to do, it'll be done defensively. They made some great plays this week, but we haven't seen that consistency from Joe Flacco and the receiving core all year long.
All right, Trey, listen, thanks for the time as always. Trey Wingo from Golic and Wingo and NFL Live. We'll look for you on the network this week.
You got it, guys. Take care.
All right, Trey Wingo from ESPN joining us in his weekly slot. And some great insight there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the AFC race is going to be an interesting one, Donald. We'll see where it goes from here.
You know, it's hard to be worse than the Bills in passing. And the Ravens have managed
They're worse than the Colts. They're worse than the Colts in passing. And they've got a third-string quarterback playing for them. All right, we've got to step aside. We've got Nuts and Bolts coming up next with Donald here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown in for the under the weather John Murphy here on the John Murphy Show with Donald Jones, and it is time for Nuts and Bolts, Donald. Take it away, because, you know, the Patriots game, I know a lot of people were disappointed in the outcome, but there were some positives here with respect to the revived pass rush.
Yeah, and I think that was the biggest thing in the game. Now, we just had Kyle Williams a couple of segments ago, and the first thing he said when you brought up sacks and, you know, revitalized play from the defensive line, he said, yeah, you know, there's some cover sacks in there.
Yep.
And when you look at it on film, if you have a chance to go back and look at it, most of those sacks, or really all of those sacks, were covered sacks, you know. So the first play that I had a chance to go back and look at was, it was technically called a sack by Shaq Lawson, right? And so on this play, if you go back and look at it, Shaq was, you know, lined up on the left side of, you know, the defense. And when the ball was snapped, really, I mean, Brady had nowhere to go with the ball. And that's why Brady was just standing back there trying to find somebody, because he had nowhere to truly go with the ball.
We have cover two here, right?
Yeah, you had like a cover two there.
it's either cover two or cover four there. I think it's a cover two. But he had nowhere to go. He had Gronk running up the seam, a safety watching him. He had a wide receiver on the outside, on the other side. You know, those guys were being occupied. The only place that he could go was a check down to the running back, or, yeah, to both running backs really coming out of the backfield. He had nowhere to go with the ball, so he's standing there trying to find somebody, and he just couldn't find anybody. And then at some point, you know, Shaq Lawson came free and made the play.
Well, yeah, and the pocket's collapsing. He's got, you know, and he's not taking off and running anywhere, especially with that sore Achilles that he has.
Right.
So, yeah, and then Shaq just got him right at the line of scrimmage.
And that was, I mean, if you are playing coverage on the back end, it gives, that's why it's so complimentary, because, you know, sometimes guys up front, they're doing their job and they get there fast. Other times, guys on the back end do a good job. And when they do that, you get those cover sacks.
And we saw that the week prior, because Alex Smith was hitching a lot too, because the Bills showed him a lot more cover too than they had shown in previous games.
And so, you know, when you have a chance to go back, now there were, what, three sacks in the game?
Right.
The next two that I'm going to talk about both happened in the red zone. And we all know when you get down into the red zone, it's a lot harder because everything is so tight. Everything
is
compact. Yeah, it's less space to work with. And so down in the red zone on the Adolphus Washington sack, you know, you had two high safeties on the back end once again. And really, the Bills dropped everybody out in the coverage. They truly just dropped everybody back. I mean, they rushed four, but you had the entire rest of the defense all in coverage. And it's hard to throw the ball down there. I don't care if you're Brady Breeze. I don't care who you are. It's truly hard to throw that ball when you have so many guys in coverage. And once again, you had another cover sack.
Right. Now, I will say this. The four that were rushing there, they won on that play. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was 4-on-5, and those guys won because they reset the line of scrimmage. I mean, they're driving. I mean, Thuney had a tough day. You see there, I mean, Adolphus, for the viewers on MSG, Adolphus Washington is dropping Thuney on his back here.
Exactly.
He's got him off balance already, two steps out of his stance. Jerry's winning around the edge on Solder. And then even, is it Shaq on the left side of the formation there? I think even he's winning. I don't know if it's him or Ryan Davis there. But
yeah, I couldn't tell who that was. But, yeah, I mean, you really had the entire defensive front win on that play. And Adolphus was the one that came free and made the play. But all of those guys, it started to collapse on Brady. He had nowhere to go with that ball.
Yeah, and it was really the one-on-one win by Washington that keyed that play, because he really only had about 2 seconds. And then, you know, Washington was in his kitchen
right
by then.
Exactly. And then on the last sack by Kyle Williams, you know, you had really the same shell there. You had a two-high shell on the back end by the safeties. And when you hear too high shell, that means that the safeties are too high. You have two high safeties, so either cover two, cover four, whatever it is, but you have two safeties
have
back
half
deep.
Or quarters. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And so on the play with Kyle, you actually had the same exact thing happen.
Four-man rush.
And actually, let's see here. You had a four-man rush, but if we could take it down for a second, if you had a four-man rush – and Kyle did a good job of winning, as we talk about that play. Kyle did a good job of winning his one-on-one battle, as he talked about, you know, when he was on set with us. He felt the guy sit down, and once he sat down, and that's why football is such a feel type of sport. You know, you're looking at different things, but you can feel a certain guy. Kyle did a good job of driving his guy all the way back. As soon as that guy went to sit down, he actually he threw him off, you know, and then he went to get the quarterback. But on the back end, once again, you had everybody covered on the back end. There was nowhere for Tom Brady to really go with the ball because everybody did good job in coverage. The only place that he could have went was, I believe it was Gronk, who was running to the corner. But by that time, Kyle was on his way to make that sack.
And here's the thing. Brady's a guy that likes to get it out quick. So on a play like that, which is at, what, the 6 or 7 yard line, the number one rule of thumb for a coverage player there is guard the goal line.
Right.
You don't want to let anybody have the goal line available to them. So what does that mean? That means based on where you are across the width of the field, you want to be right there to make a play on a pass that comes at the goal line. You don't want to give that guy an opening to have a free look to catch the ball and look it in at the goal line. So you guard the goal line first. Anything over the top, You just got to do your best.
You make the play. And that's why you'll see once you get down into the red zone, quarterbacks make those seam throws up high. They make those back line throws up high. All of the throws are up high because you have everybody else sitting underneath that stuff. I remember last year there was a play, I think it was like Bakari Rambo. He backed up into the end zone, and I watched him the entire play. You know, and as a DB, you don't typically do that. You know, you do sit your heels on the goal line. He backed up into the end zone, and they threw it right in front of him. And it was a touchdown literally right in front of him. And
that's
I remember saying,
job number one, right?
Exactly. And I remember saying, why did you just back up into the end zone? You never do that.
You're not covering anything of any worth.
Right.
If your guy is in front of you and he's in the end zone beyond the goal line,
right,
you're hosed because that's exactly where they're going with the football,
exactly.
And you can't do anything unless you go through him and commit a penalty.
Right, exactly. And if you get a good enough quarterback, he's going to put it in there. But those guys on those three plays did – they had very good coverage on the back end, and it helped out with sacks, you know, on the front end of the defense.
All right, so those are Nuts and Bolts by Donald Jones, brought to you by Napa Auto Parts, as we took a closer look as to why the Bills were more successful with their pass rush, and hopefully that continues this week, and it should against the most sacked quarterback in the NFL right now. I mean, I think they're 30th in sacks per play allowed, so they're not last in the league, but in terms of how many times he's been taken down – he's right up there among the league leaders.
It's interesting because since I've been truly watching football, I don't ever remember the Colts having a good offensive line. You know, even when Peyton was there, he was getting the ball out fast.
Right.
You know, and that was helping out.
He was getting the ball out fast, but he was running the offense slow because their defense was awful also.
Right.
So their offensive approach was run the play clock down to one almost every time. Mm-hmm. So if most teams would have a 9-play, 78-yard drive, and it would take 6.5 minutes off the clock. The Colts would take 9.5 minutes off because Peyton was running the play clock down to one every time because they wanted the offense, when the opposing offense came back out on the field after they had a touchdown drive, they'd have less time to work with. And it was a smart way to do that. They knew their defense was bad. So eat up as much clock as you can while you're on the field. Anthony Costanzo, who's still on this roster, was a late first-round pick. They drafted their center at a Stanford High. I think he was a second or a third-round pick for them. Kelly? I think he was Stanford. Those are the only high picks for their offensive line in recent memory for me. I mean, I suppose on closer look, we may find a couple of others, but they have not invested heavily in that offensive line, which really boggles the mind when you have Peyton Manning followed by Andrew Luck, who, oh, by the way, is not playing because he was hit too many times.
And Andrew Luck traditionally isn't a quarterback that gets it out fast.
No, but he is very mobile and athletic.
Right.
So despite that,
there's only so much you can do. I mean, Russell Wilson has dealt with that in Seattle, you know, them not really investing into their offensive line. Because we have a mobile quarterback. Well, that's only going to get you so far. Yeah, you know, and so the Colts, I don't remember them having a strong offensive line. I don't really remember them having a strong defense either, you know. I mean, you might have an anomaly type of year where they might have a better defense, but traditionally that defense has not been good in Indianapolis. It's really been they had Peyton, they had Marvin Harrison, they had Reggie Wayne. You know, they had some good receivers and quarterback play. Maybe a little play out of the running back, but they don't even typically have a good running back out there either.
Yeah, their points for are 205 on the year. Points against 330. That is an ugly point differential. After 12 games, I mean, that's 125 points.
That's a big difference.
That's bad. Their worst quarters, the Colts' worst quarters in terms of scoring, are the first and the fourth quarter. So that could be good for the Bills because the Bills have gotten out of the gate slow this year in first quarter scoring. That is the Bills' worst quarter. They've only scored 23 points in the first quarter in 12 games so far. And third quarter has not been kind of late, where they've been outscored 65-6 in their last five games, the Bills have in the third quarter. I asked Coach Dennison and Coach Frazier, because both sides of the ball have had trouble here coming out of the locker room in the second half. I said, you know, can you put your finger on what's going on there? Because it's been bad both ways. And For the defense, the answer is a little simpler because they've given up 658 yards in the last five games in the third quarter alone. Now, we have some of those ugly games from the three-game losing streak in there, and you know, it was better against the Chiefs, but again, giving up some yardage in the third quarter. Last week, the two touchdown drives, all 14 points in the third quarter. So you say, what is it? And Coach Frazier said, look, it's never just really one thing. He goes, but I do know a lot of our takeaways in the first seven games this year seem to come in the third quarter. And I went back and looked it up. He's absolutely right. Seven of the Bills' first 15 takeaways in those first seven games this year came in the third quarter. Wow. They had seven takeaways, no giveaways in the third quarter in their first seven games of the season. And then in these last five, they have three giveaways and no takeaways. So really, you know, we've talked about how the Bills have kind of lived and died by how often they've been able to get takeaways, and it's really proving to be true.
If you remember back to last year's team, you know, total different regime. I understand all of that stuff. But if you think back to last year's team, I think they went on like a four-game winning streak or something like
right.
that.
Right, yeah, in the and they of the
had,
schedule there.
They had some turnovers during that streak, and then that went dry, and you had the team losing again, you know. So this hasn't, over the last couple of years, been a team that can score points on their own without the turnovers.
Right.
And truly play strong defense without causing those turnovers and hold teams, you know, in terms of yardage. I mean, even when they were getting all those turnovers earlier this year, they were giving up some yards. You know,
right.
they would just get a turnover in the red zone or something like that. And so it truly covered up a lot of the fact that they were giving up a lot
of
yards.
It gave the offense extra possessions.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there was a stat earlier in the year, I think it was right at the midseason mark after eight games played, where the Bills with two takeaways or more were averaging 22 points a game. With one takeaway per game or less, they were averaging 11 points a game. And I think that's kind of held up.
Yeah.
I mean, we look at this past week, they get the one turnover at the end from Tre'Davious, and how many points are on the board?
Three.
You know, the previous week against Kansas City, no takeaways in that game. They score 16. And I think that's kind of where they are. You know, if they get one or fewer takeaways, points are really
hard to come by
for this team for a whole number of reasons. You know, we talked about the lack of separation in the passing game, the fact that the passing game is woefully anemic, averaging, I think, somewhere around 175, 80 yards a game, which is not going to win you a lot unless other things are happening,
which haven't
like
been.
Takeaways.
Yeah.
So,
which haven't been, including.
I don't know what to wish
game.
For, that the takeaway train comes back or that the offense somehow gets this bolt of lightning that strikes it, which is our Twitter poll today. What is going to be the jumper cables for this offense? It might be takeaways. Maybe that goes in the other category.
I think so. Yeah, we need to. That
it's
is
proven
the
effective
category.
Earlier
we,
in the
we
year.
We should have put that up there.
Maybe we should wish for that. But we got to step aside, take a break. When we come back, Donald and I will talk more about that very Twitter poll. What needs to be the jumper cables for the Bills offense coming up this week against the Colts? We'll also take a couple of calls. We have some people waiting patiently. We'll get to them. On the other side, it's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Donald Jones back with you here on the John Murphy Show, filling in for an under-the-weather John Murphy. Hope he's back soon, feeling better. Probably getting some chicken soup at home today.
Probably.
But time now for Unit's milestones. With his 93 yards rushing on Sunday against the Patriots, LeSean McCoy reached 3,000 yards rushing with the Bills in just 39 games, now tied with Travis Henry as the fastest Bills running back to reach the 3,000-yard rushing mark. Unit's milestones saves lives. Join Team Units. Donate blood. Visit units.org. I've got my Units card, so. You know, it wasn't until about a year or so ago, after I got my card that I realized, you know, what blood type I am and all of that stuff. Because mm-hmm. I would always go to donate blood, and they'd ask me, well, what's your blood type? I'm like, I have no idea.
Yeah, I didn't know my blood type until I was going for my transplant.
Yeah, you're kidding.
Yeah, issues. I didn't know. But breaking news, Juju Smith-Schuster suspended one game.
Come on.
Suspended one game. Bengals safety George, I don't know how to pronounce that
Ioka.
Last name. Yeah, suspended one game. So you got Juju Smith-Schuster suspended for the hit on Vontaze Burfict.
On a football play.
Right.
And you got Gronk gets one game for a dead ball, premeditated hit that left somebody in the concussion protocol.
Right.
I don't get it. All right, let's go to the phones. We'll go 803-0550. Got some people waiting patiently there. We'll start with Andy in Rochester. Andy, you're on the John Murphy Show. What do you have for us today?
Hey, Chris. Hey, Donald. How are you guys?
Good.
Good. I'm going to sound like a nerd here, but I'm gonna reference Madden in terms of how we break our offensive woes right now. I think that, just from reading the articles, following the guys on Twitter, I don't think Tyrod's going to start this week. If let's just go with the hypothetical, Peterman's going to start. I don't see why they don't spread it out on offense, to be honest with you. They have Kadett, who's good out of the backfield. They've got McCoy. They can motion him back into a shotgun formation. I also don't know if you heard on the broadcast the Bills-Patriots game, Tony Romo called Nate Peterman's release beautiful. Hmm. So I don't know if that bite made it up to your media area, but he did say that. So Peterman's got a quick release. I think, just a short passing game, and then I think that might open up some running lanes for McCoy and just control the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. Madden isn't the NFL, so that can get a little tricky. I think also Travaris Kadett, who I like and has been a nice jolt to the offense and an extra dimension, he's also a guy who is in concussion protocol right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's even going to be available for the game, though I respect wanting to spread the field completely. I get what you're saying. And Andy, thanks for the call. We do have to move on. I don't know. I want to say it's easy. It's that easy to fix it. I'm not convinced it will be. Spread him out is a nice thing to say. And right. With their DBs as inexperienced as they are, it makes logical sense.
Right. But we've talked about on air, teams are not threatened by this passing attack, right? So even if you spread them out and you want to pass the ball, or if you spread them out and you want to run the ball, you said it, teams are staying in base personnel,
yeah.
Against your spread offense.
Because the Saints
they don't,
did that.
Right, exactly. They do not trust the fact. They don't trust the fact that your receivers can get open.
They're comfortable putting a linebacker on Jordan Matthews.
Right.
For example.
So spreading them out, I don't know if that's going to help out either.
We'll have to see what the Bills' game plan turns out to be come Sunday against the Colts. We don't have time. All right, we've got to go to break.
With the Apollo.
We're going to wrap it all up here for this hour. But coming up next hour, Bills Wall of Famer Steve Tasker will join us. He actually was on the sidelines last night for Westwood One Radio for Steelers-Bengals. He probably had an ear full of collisions down there on the sidelines. Maybe even he was wincing at some of those. And we'll talk to him about the suspensions, including the one to Juju Smith-Schuster. One game for that, which is equal to one game for Gronk. I mean, come on. What are we talking about? It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports Update.
Your sports update from One Bills Drive. It is the players' off day as the coaches get busy installing the game plan. Offensive coordinator Rick Dennison admitted Monday there has to be more consistent production on his side of the ball. And while the coaching staff may have a good idea as to who their quarterback will be on Sunday against the Colts, for the rest of us, that situation very much undecided, with Tyrod Taylor not 100%. Head coach Sean McDermott said, if healthy, Taylor will be the starter, but with a knee contusion that is unknown at this point. We'll obviously know more when the team hits the practice field on Wednesday. Rob Gronkowski going to appeal his one-game suspension today for his dirty hit on Tre'Davious White last Sunday. After the whistle that left White in the concussion protocol, Gronk will meet with Derek Brooks, who is handling the appeal hearing at the league offices in New York. A decision on the appeal could be known by the end of the day. Steelers linebacker Ryan Shazier hospitalized last night after suffering a back injury that saw him taken off the field on a backboard. The news right now encouraging for Shazier as he's been diagnosed with a spinal contusion and does not need any form of surgery. The feeling has come back to his legs as well, and according to doctors, he continues to improve. The other note coming out of that game, Juju Smith-Schuster, he has been suspended for one game for his hit on Vontaze Burfict during the course of a play in the game last night. And finally, the Sabres begin a three-game road trip tonight in Colorado against the Avalanche. Face-off is scheduled for 9 p.m. That is your sports update here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. And joining us as promised here for the 2 o'clock hour of the show is Bills Wall of Famer Steve Tasker, who was at the game working for Westwood One last night between the Bengals and the Steelers. We always know it's going to be a physical game between those two rivals, Steve, but you were on the sidelines, right? So
yeah.
Some of those collisions, as ear-popping as maybe you've ever heard in a while?
Yeah, I mean, I was on the down marker for most of the game, and you knew it was going to be one of those games. Vontaze Burfict brings that kind of attitude towards it. By the way, he's a phenomenal player, and when he came out of the game, it was over. It was over for the Bengals. Their defense was a mess as soon as he got carted off. Shazier, crazy hit, crazy play with him. That was an innocuous tackle. It was really a nothing tackle. I'd let you know that sometimes when you get caught wrong, you know, especially with the back,
his head was a little down.
Yeah, exactly. But it was just a reflexive play. It wasn't like he wound up and tried to lead with a crown. He just kind of caught the guy coming across the middle, you know, and he thought, I got to get, you know, he was a little awkward. It didn't look that big of a deal. It was very low, went right at his waist. Mm-hmm. You know,
he immediately grabbed
the middle of
his spine.
He knew. And I've had not obviously that happen, but I've had hits. You know, you make a hit and it's like, wow, you feel that someplace else down your spine, mm-hmm. because you buckled a little bit, and it's, you think, wow, that. And I had one that bothered me for weeks after I did it, and it's just one of those things.
He couldn't feel his legs. He couldn't move. I know. You could tell.
Freaking
out.
You could tell.
He was like moving his hands.
You could tell because when he rolled over, see, he couldn't, you know, get his lower extremities to work. His hands were working, and he was talking to them, and they were interacting with him. I was like, you know, I was like right on the sidelines, right there at the 20 where he was at. And, you know, he was talking to him and stuff. And even so, as it went on and on, you know, the Steelers guys came out, and so did the Bengals guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing about it is everybody talks about how nasty and hard-fought that game is and how much animosity there is. After the game's over, you know, those guys are hugging and yucking it up and exchanging jerseys and signing jerseys for each other. And, I mean, I remember what that was like. It was kind of a light switch.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. I mean, it's crazy how fast they can flip over to being in this fraternity of the NFL, you know. It's the respect is rampant, even though and so is the malicious intent, though, unfortunately, sometimes.
Yeah, so, I mean, we look at that, and then we go to the Juju Smith-Schuster hit. And
yeah,
I think what really ticked people off, and particularly Bengals and Bengals fans, was the standing over after the hit. That's what really, I think, raises the ire more than the other hit, because, you know, at that speed, it's a football play. You know, Burfict drops his body weight at the last second. I mean, there's no time for Smith-Schuster to adjust his target point and lower himself as well, because they're like, oh, helmet to helmet, he hit him in the chin. But, you know, Burfict is kind of lowering his body to, you know,
well, it, yeah, it's
can't
a football play.
Your target point that late in the game.
It's a football play that for decades and decades up until the last 4, 5, 6 years has been perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
And not that it's not, you know, not uncomfortable for Vontaze Burfict, but I'll tell you this too: Smith-Schuster knew who he was hitting,
right?
And if that would have been Nick Vigil or Michael Johnson, he doesn't stand over those guys.
Right.
But because of the history and the kind of guy and player that Vontaze is, you know, that he does that to him, and that's what bothered me too about it. It's a bad look for the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's a bad look for the league, and it's a bad look for Juju Smith-Schuster.
For one game for that in comparison to Gronk? I mean,
and I get it. There's a big difference because Gronk's was after the play on a defenseless player that there was not a football act. It was a malicious intent act. Mm-hmm. He was frustrated, you know, obviously at the officials. He was taking it out on Tre'Davious. That was, to me, is the line that was crossed there that was way different for Gronkowski than it was for – you know, any of these other guys were hitting with the Iloka's hit in the back of the end zone on Antonio Brown, the hit right there on Vontaze Burfict. That one that Gronk put on Tre'Davious was different. It was different.
More than a game.
I agree.
It definitely should have been more than a game. And Steve, you've been in locker rooms where you, like you said, he knew who he was hitting. He knows the history of that guy with this team, you know. I'm in the room with Antonio Brown every day, you know, and he wasn't on the team when a couple of years ago, I don't think, when Antonio Brown got hit. But look, this is my brother, you know, and you have taken shots at us since I've been here for however long, and I've watched you take that shot on Antonio Brown. So, yeah, we do have a certain feeling towards you. Receivers, you know, unfortunately, when you're peeling back on somebody, you hope for a shot like that, you know. Not that you want to take them out of the game or really hurt them, but
no,
so many guys take shots on you, Donald, as a receiver.
Nice
that
you hope, back
right. Donald, you know why you hope for a shot like that? Because you don't want to hurt you.
Right.
It ain't going to hurt me. And, though, you know, you block some – you pass pro or you go out on a block, you get out on the edge. It hurts, man. It hurts when they see you coming. This is a free shot to make a nice block – and not hurt yourself.
Right.
You could care less about the other guy. You're going to keep him from making the tackle.
Right.
Now, and I get it. It's on the peel back block that he did. That it's a football play. I mean, it's part of the game, and it's an instinctive play as well. Mm-hmm. You're going to knock that guy out, and he's not looking. You're going to make sure he feels it. But and it would have been fine if he'd have been just 6 inches lower.
Right.
But he wasn't. And, the taunting thing, that's always
been.
In this day and age, I'm glad they called that first. But what I don't get, and we were talking about this off the air, and they mentioned a little Boomer Esiason and Kevin Harlan up in the booth, and I said it too. They called two penalties on Juju Smith-Schuster, and they only enforced one. Mm-hmm. And to me, the first one, the block was an unnecessary roughness. The taunt was a dead ball. Mm-hmm. It should have enforced two of them. It should have had 30 yards in penalties instead of 15.
Right.
And it should, and that, to me, that's where the Steelers got off light as well. So I don't know why that the officials, maybe it's a league rule, and maybe they don't want them to do that, but give a 30-yard penalty out.
Yeah.
But I don't see why not. I think there was two separate incidents. They called two separate. They declined one and accepted the more egregious.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think one was a football play and one was after the whistle.
It's crazy. Obviously, in this game, the Bills game with the Patriots, you had two different guys, but on the same play, basically, you had the whole thing with Gronk, and then you had
Micah Hyde,
and then you had
with Amendola.
Right.
Those two guys are shoving each other. They get offsetting personal unnecessary roughness penalties because they're pushing each other back.
And that offsets
forth.
Gronkowski's penalty.
Right. But then you had
had Jerry Hughes, which was separate because it was with an official. So the Bills were the team that ended up getting tagged the 15 yards, and it's first and 25 for them after the interception.
Yeah, I think for me, and I can see that now. We were talking about how I was surprised there wasn't a fight, you know, because when he sees it. But it happened in certain instances. When that happened and the timing of Gronkowski's hit was such that nobody was looking at him. The play was over. Tre'Davious was down. Everybody kind of looked up at the official to say, why didn't you call this penalty? Why didn't you do that? And everybody else, even look at the guys on the sideline if you're watching it on
the
TV.
Patriots,
look at all the Patriot
coach
guys. They're looking at the officials down the sidelines. Nobody even sees Gronk do that.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that hit, Gronk disqualifies himself from the game.
He should have been ejected.
Yeah,
he disqualifies himself for that. He was frustrated, no doubt. And there's no question on the replay, Tre'Davious is holding holding him. It should have been a penalty.
You're frustrated on
it
that
It should have
one
been a
play,
penalty.
You know,
and Gronk gets a lot of that. You
he
know?
Pushes off all the time.
Sure he does.
Well, he pushed off on that play.
But here's the thing. But the thing you don't get, why is he mad at Tre'Davious?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Tre'Davious ain't going to throw a flag on himself.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just frustration. And he lost his mind. And I think in that case, you know, you need to remove him.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones because we got a couple of callers that want to weigh in on this as well. We go to Doug in Rochester, who's been waiting patiently. Doug, what do you have for us on whether it's Gronk or any of the hits we saw last night that have now gotten suspensions?
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking the call on the no-nonsense show. You guys are great. What it's about Gronk, and one of the things that I have not heard come up at all is the NFLPA's role in this, if they're involved in this appeal process. You know, here we are talking about Gronk, who did something egregious as far as I'm concerned, whether he should, you know, if he wins this appeal, then he doesn't have one-game suspension. But what's Tre'Davious White's recourse in this? It seems kind of hypocritical that here's the victim that, you know, has no say in the, you know, how this is adjudicated.
Yeah, this is, and thanks for the call.
The PA,
Doug,
won't
appreciate
get
you waiting.
The PA won't get involved in this.
You know. Well, they'll get involved in the – it's the PA's duty and their job to stick up for the
Gronk.
Player in the appeal process. They're on the player's side mm-hmm. that got penalized with the
so
suspension.
They're representing Gronk
right.
at the hearing
they
today
don't,
with him.
Nobody says anything. He's got a good point. Tre'Davious is powerless and forgotten in this, mm-hmm. in this
right.
part of it.
And that's the part of me that really is bothered by the appeals process. I understand why it's in place. It's in place in the event – that someone is wrongfully accused or the league is over-judicious in penalizing somebody, and that's why it's there.
Yeah.
But still in all, the bottom line is this. How does Gronk take a one-game penalty and get the opportunity to appeal it, potentially down to nothing and a fine, while Tre'Davious White is sitting in the concussion protocol and this team doesn't have its number one cornerback for who knows how long?
Right.
I mean, if it's grade one, grade two, grade – I mean, we don't – Tre'Davious may not get on the field again this year if it's
right.
that bad a concussion. You got a 260-pound man dropping an elbow on him with his full body weight behind it. That's the problem that I have with it.
Well,
I know why you have an appeals process and all the union stuff and all of that, but the damage is done, and to be able to reduce it in a span of a day so your guy can play on Sunday if they remove the one game, that's just – there's something wrong with that there. There really is.
Yeah, it does seem at this point in history – the suspension and the length of suspensions and the fine system seems arbitrary.
Like, if you have a one-game suspension, you should not be able to appeal that. I mean, what are we doing? If you
mm-hmm.
think the penalty, if you think the crime committed is worthy of a one-game suspension, why do you have the opportunity to reduce that? If you got something that's 4-6 games, you know, like Ezekiel Elliott, 6 games, you want to appeal that? I could see there might be some margin to play with there. But one game, those should be unappealable outright. Because if that's what you deem the offense to be worthy of, you shouldn't be able to just negotiate it down in a day, one day later.
Yeah, like I said, I wouldn't mind if they had a more concrete way of evaluating who gets suspended and for what and for how long. Because right now, right, you guys like us sit on radio shows across the country. Every sports talk radio show is having a discussion about what they think should happen to Gronk.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody agrees.
Right.
Nobody. It should be
but
one game. It should be four games. It should be five games. It could be three games. Whatever
I
it is,
two
a fine.
Would have been fair.
At least two.
Yeah,
if you're
that's
try
fine.
To
you can say that. Here's the thing. Here's my point. It's fine if you think two. Let's write it down and say, listen, if you do A, then B happens to you. If you do C, then D happens to you. You don't. There shouldn't be this huge uncertainty. And why don't you spell it out as best you can, so that the guys know what they're going to get into? Now, Gronk, one game. You know what? There's a couple of things. When I was playing, I'll take the one game if I can get that shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right?
I mean, that's the mentality of these guys. We're going to the playoffs. I'm pulling down $3.5 million. I'll give up one game check
mm-hmm.
to make a point to that guy because he's been bothering me for 5 years. He's been taking on and on. It's so arbitrary, the length and the way that the fine system and the length of the suspensions and what they get suspended for.
As you talk about it being arbitrary, as we talk about the taunting with Juju Smith-Schuster standing over Vontaze Burfict. And it all being a bad look on the league, I mean, it's a bad look, the fact that they both got one game suspension. I mean, that is a bad look.
And
that just goes to your arbitrary point.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what are we doing here? This dude made a play within the confines of the game. This guy didn't, but they get suspended for the same amount.
Right. And let's go to the phones again, because Jeff in Jamestown believes he's got a feel for the difference between Gronk and Juju as well. So, Jeff, what do you have for us?
Well, you know, that hit with Gronk is I played college football, watched football. That was the worst hit I've ever seen. Plus, he had that thing on his arm, and he intently tried to hurt him. I mean, in one game, that's unconscionable, to use a Marv Levy word.
Well, yeah, there you go. I mean, that's Jeff's a great example of why it's hard to get agreement on what it should be. And as to your point about the appealing a one-game suspension, yeah. Here's the thing. The on-field stuff should be cut and dried. You should be able to say, listen, that's a personal foul. It should be. And if he gets another, like, for instance, Gronkowski, if he gets another personal foul in the next 2 weeks, it should be an automatic two-game suspension after that. You know what I mean? So if he tacks onto an act like this and it becomes a pattern, then it starts to snowball for him, and he gets steeper and steeper. That is my opinion. But the thing of the matter is, and what you're saying is, think about the Ezekiel Elliott thing that happened 2 years ago, and it was worse. That stuff, okay, appeal all that, because that's the judicial system that's off the field, that's a political, social crime that you got to deal with. And for me, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that's not on the football field.
Right.
So I think those got to be somehow you got to draw a line down the middle of that and separate those in the suspensions and the how they handle and how they punish things like that off the field rather than on the field. I think there's got to be two separate.
See, well, here's I think two you go to the you know as much I think as college football being a joke with all of the stuff that's happening down at that level. We do know, okay, you get suspended for a game if there's a targeting hit, boom. You know, you get suspended for a game, depending on if it's, you know, they have two different levels. But at least you have it black and white. This is what it is. In this league, you don't have that, you know. You had the Juju Smith-Schuster. Okay, if that's he gets suspended for that, that's what it is. But Gronk was after the play. So you need to have something for that.
And there should be a separation there. And that's why I felt this was a golden opportunity for the league to set an example here. This is not within the play in a game. It is outside of that.
See,
and this is someone that, with malicious intent, as Steve said, I'm gonna drill this guy because I'm ticked off at the officials. And, I mean, he hits that guy. If he doesn't hit him on the back of the helmet and hits him on the neck, I mean, he might paralyze the guy.
Yeah,
I mean,
here's
a big man and doing damage.
The league already missed a huge opportunity because, for me, this Gronk hit is a lot like the fight between between Michael Crabtree and
Crabtree and Tlaib.
Aqib Tlaib. That's a lot like this. Totally outside it. Those guys were in a fist fight, and it spilled over. And both things look equally bad on the field, and they're outside the framework of the game. Both those game suspensions, those two instances that we're talking about, should have been treated, I think, much the same.
And much more severely because
that's right.
You have to – it's almost like, you know, when your mom or dad, when you were a kid, they overstepped and just totally buried you
with a punishment that was far greater than
maybe even the crime was. But, oh, man, you never did it again.
Yeah, they set
you never did it again.
They set you up for a memory.
Right.
Right. So
you got to remember it.
That's what the league's got to do with these kinds of infractions. They got to make the penalty so bad to make it a deterrent for anyone who's even thinking of doing that in the scope of a game again. That's not to say it's going to completely eliminate it. It's an emotional sport. Sometimes guys are just going to blow their stack and do something stupid. But if you have that kind of a penalty where it goes way beyond what anybody's even expecting, people are going to sit up and take notice and be like, okay, can't do that anymore.
Yeah, now, think about the stuff outside the whistles, they should hammer
that
stuff,
I think. Think about the A.J. Green incident, you know, a couple weeks ago, the same day as the Mike Evans
coming all the way across the field.
All of those guys were ejected from the game. So for me, the league missed the boat. Mm-hmm. They missed an opportunity to eject Gronk.
That's the same thing. Gronk, Crabtree, and Tlaib, and Mike. Yeah,
those guys should have been ejected.
All those guys should have been treated the same way.
You get ejected first.
That's exactly
right. That
right
there, they missed.
It's all outside the game.
Right, you know, so you get ejected, and now we'll deal with your suspension from there, which they also, for me, missed the boat on that one, too, you know. They just messed up a few times on this one.
So, I don't know, maybe we put this to bed for now. Obviously, we're going to see where the appeal goes later today. We could find out later today whether the appeal is reduced or upheld. I want to believe that Derek Brooks is going to uphold. I mean, it's one game.
Yeah.
Can we at least uphold that? I mean, in some way, shape, or form here for what he did? I mean, I can't find my way around reducing
that. I can't believe it's just one game. So if they
reduce that,
I'm like, that might be payback for Deflategate, you know? I mean.
All right, so, Steve, why don't we jump into the AFC standings here a little bit?
Oh, man.
Just, you know, obviously the Bills are in a position now where they're going to have to do some scoreboard watching, probably have to win at least three of the next four to finish 9-7 and at least have a shot at it. And even then, nothing's guaranteed. As you know, you can look up on the board that we have there to kind of see where things are at. But
I was going to try and pull up on my phone. I didn't know I had the screen.
Yeah,
okay,
so, you know, to me – yeah, Buffalo's got three winnable games left in their last four.
Theoretically, the thing is, when you're 6-6 at the three-quarter poll with four games to go, you can get in. You got to run the table.
Well, with this schmozzle in the AFC,
you
can.
You've got to run the table. There's no question. Somebody out there is going to run the Chargers may run the table.
I think the Chargers are going to –
the Chargers may run the
end
table.
Up winning that division.
Baltimore is sitting in the driver's seat.
But they play Pittsburgh this week.
Right.
Sunday night.
The Bills have got to win games. They've got to beat the Colts. They've got to beat the Dolphins twice, and they got to find a way to beat New England.
In New England,
but all three of those other games could be had. This Colt game is an absolute must. It all goes away if they lose to this weekend to the Colts.
Right, and the good thing, and we mentioned this last hour with Trey Wingo,
I don't think seven losses is going to get you in.
Yeah, well, yeah, I understand what you're saying. We got a lot of those teams there do have to play one another.
Yeah.
So somebody's going to lose somewhere in there,
and
somebody's going to win, obviously, too. But there are some head-to-head matchups in the AFC West. In the AFC East, I know the Dolphins are further down, as well as the Jets in terms of where they are behind the Bills. But you look at it, and the Chargers are a hot team right now, and that's a good thing for the Bills.
Sure.
You want them to go on and win the division because they don't have the head-to-head tiebreaker with the Chargers, but they do with the Chiefs and Raiders.
That's right.
They beat those two teams in the head-to-head. So you'd want them to fall back into the wild card pack, let the Chargers go win the AFC
West. I think we're already ahead of the Raiders.
For head-to-head.
And the Chiefs,
but I'm saying,
like the Chiefs are falling back.
You don't want the Chargers in the wild card mix.
The Chiefs draft pick may be better than our first-round draft pick that we traded for. I mean, they're falling
like a stone here.
I cannot believe what's happened to them.
And they tried.
I will say, though, I called it.
You did call it.
They tried to change things up this week. You know, Andy Reid hands play-calling duties over to Matt Nagy, try to break some of their tendencies. They score 31 points, but then their defense – falls on their face and gives up 38 to the Jets.
They were playing so well early in the season. I knew they couldn't keep it up.
Eric Berry, that hurt that defense.
They were playing unbelievably good.
I mean, I think the Chargers are going to win that division. The way they're playing, and honestly, they just have so much talent. You know, if they can keep it together with Phillip Rivers at the helm.
Well, that's been the problem, staying healthy. That was their biggest problem the last two or three years.
But they're healthy this year, you know, and they have those defensive ends that we know here in Buffalo. They have the back end of the defense is hard hitting. You know, they can make plays as well. But when you have those defensive ends that they have, they're going to get to some quarterbacks. And then on the offensive side of the ball, Keenan Allen – you pulled up the stat earlier. I mean, Keenan Allen is playing lights out right now. Right. As well as any receiver in the league right now. I mean, he's making teams look bad.
Yeah, so in a long story short, though, I mean, it means one team from the West is probably going to get in. If all this falls like we're thinking it is, one team from the West, not three, like we thought at the beginning of the year when it was Denver and the Raiders and the Chiefs.
And the Chiefs.
You know, now it's going to be the Chargers.
Yeah, the only team in the West falling.
Nobody thought the Chargers.
The only team falling faster than the Chiefs are the Broncos. I mean, holy cow!
Yeah.
You want to talk about
it's
a plummet?
It's coming apart up there.
That's really bad.
I mean, is Chad Kelly even healthy?
He is not.
No,
he's still not healthy. Not completely. Listen.
They might draft another.
When they drafted Chad Kelly, I thought they're going to have a hard time not only noticing his arm strength and arm talent, but knowing how he can seeing how he plays. And they're going to have a hard time keeping him off the roster. He's not healthy, though.
Yeah.
And that's really the only thing that derailed him. Because I'm telling you, when they come back to training camp next year, Chad Kelly is going to go up that ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what they're going to do at a quarterback next year, but Chad Kelly is going to leapfrog a couple of those guys on their roster, I'm sure.
All right, we got to take a break, but we're going to keep Steve here to take part in True or False in our next segment, so stay tuned for that. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Donald Jones, and Steve Tasker joining us here on the John Murphy Show. Time now for our Ad Pro Sports Coach of the Year in Section 6. It's West Seneca West's Mike Vastola. Vastola led his team to an undefeated season and their first playoff appearance in 12 years. In the end, West Seneca West captured the Class A championship, so congratulations to him and his team. And in Section 5, it's Eric Werner of Hornell. Despite their only loss of the season, Werner led his team to the Class B quarterfinals, finishing the season at 10-1. It was the first time Hornell had appeared in the state tournament since 2012. So good job by those two coaches. Ad Pro Sports Coaches of the Year.
Hornell.
What's wrong with Hornell?
I mean, I played when I was in junior college, we played out for state.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's in Hornell. We beat them like 70-0. But I remember coming up, and I'm like, there's nothing, nothing up here.
A lot of farmland.
All. Yeah.
No. Hey, that's where, you know, the milk you get in the grocery store, that's where it's coming from.
It's coming from Hornell.
So don't knock it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I used to have to drive through there just to get to college.
I played a lot of football games in places you've never heard of or
never seen.
Pretty flat out in Kansas there. We were just out there a couple weeks ago.
We wanted to when I was in junior college to go to Kansas and play. We never got out
there. Yeah.
All right, guys. As we said, it is time now for True or False. And we are going to lead off with Herm Edwards, the former ESPN analyst, is now the head coach at Arizona State. And he had a press conference, his introductory press conference, you know, kind of met the media out there in Tempe. And let's just say his press conference did not disappoint. We actually have some highlights, so let's listen to that, and then we'll see what you guys think about it. Herm Edwards.
I'm on the train, by the way. I'm on the train. And I'm going to ride it. I will ride this train until it stops. It's not going to stop. Some people will question, well, you haven't coached in a long time. You haven't been on the field. Turn the TV on Wednesday. I'll be back in studio in Bristol. And I'll be coaching football, by the way. That's what I do. I coach football. And I've been coaching football my whole life. You don't forget how to coach. They're not bringing me here to play. Devil's Digest, huh?
Yes, sir.
Where you located, my man?
Right here in Tempe.
Okay, Devil's Digest, okay. I'm Catholic now. I'm a Christian. Watch out them devils.
So, Herm Edwards' press conference, did it disappoint? Did it impress? What do we say, true or false here?
I mean, he's always, even on air, he has that type of, you know, persona and personality on air. That's kind of how he does it. I remember seeing some of his speeches from when he was a coach. So
With the Jets?
Yeah.
You play to win the game.
So you got to expect that from Herm, you know?
Herm can preach it. I mean, I don't worry about Herm being a leader and getting those guys to play hard. My huge question is, I wonder who's going to be on his staff.
I said the same thing.
Now, who's going to be his offensive coordinator, defensive? Where's he going to get those guys? Because, you know, he's not – you know,
now Gunther Cunningham's available.
Mike Golick's not going to come out of the radio booth.
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, he's not going to. You know, those guys and all those guys, they're not going to leave their cushy media jobs to go out in Arizona State and hit the recruiting trail and stuff.
Right. I
think it's going to be really interesting to see who coaches for.
I've read up on, you know, the plan that they have there, and it sounds like they're going to try to run this almost like a pro team in terms of targeting talent to recruit. And then I think Herm is the guy that you want in the living room with mom.
Oh, he can sell it. He can sell it.
You want him in the living room with mom, selling mom on Arizona State.
Herm can close the deal with mom. No question.
He can.
I think that's where he's going to be.
I think he needs a
most valuable.
Listen, that's what a lot of those guys are. That's what that back in the day. That's what Joe Paul was at the end. You know, in the last, you know, years of his, he's closed the deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was a great mom and dad recruiter.
I think he needs a younger staff. You know, he needs guys that can, number one, relate to these kids.
Right.
because that is a big part of it. You're talking about a younger generation. He coached in the NFL. He hasn't coached in how long now, you know? Now he's going to be going in recruiting high school kids and bringing them to Arizona State.
Targeting 16, 17-year-olds.
Right, you know? And so he needs to be able to have guys that relate to those kids. It's one thing to close a deal.
Right.
It's another thing to, once they get on campus, get them, you know, be able to relate with them so that, you know, you understand everything that's going on within your program, and you can get these kids to play hard for you.
And you're competing with USC,
yeah,
UCLA,
Chip Kelly,
Oregon, you know, even Washington State's
and
back
you gotta,
in the mix.
And that's the thing too.
Stanford, I mean,
he's got to.
Right.
Let's face it, Herm's going to have to go in there and you know, most of these, like a Chip Kelly, a Nick Saban, Jim Harbaugh, these guys that have, you know. They've got a program and a way to do things at every level that they can just come in and say, hey, here's how we're going to do this. Here's mm-hmm. going to recruit. Here's how we're going to feed them. This is how we're going to this is where we're going to have them live. This is how we're going to run the study hall. This is how we're going to run our practice schedule. Herm's got to have all that mm-hmm. up and running. You know, they got to get that going. And it's got to look the way Herm envisions it to look.
Right.
If he hasn't, you know, I don't, you know, that's the, it is an enormous, and it's not pro football.
Exactly.
It's college football.
It's a difference.
It's way
a different animal, yeah.
You're going to be recruiting kids who were going to be different human beings when you actually need them to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're recruiting kids who really at 17 years old, you're offering these kids scholarships as to what they're going to look like in 5 years, 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of them aren't shaving now. Some of them are going to grow 6 inches, 7 inches in height. They're going to put on 60 pounds.
And they're not all going to be five-star athletes.
Exactly. And, yeah, and
especially
all of a sudden they're kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different world.
Yeah.
But I got a lot of faith in Herm.
And you
got to
deal
it.
With boosters.
Yeah, well, it's like different. That. Yeah, you don't deal with ownership. You deal with boosters and you deal with the administration.
All right, mm-hmm. let's go on to the second one here. True or false, Keenan Allen is in the midst of the greatest wide receiver stretch in league history. Now, we know that people can cut stats any different way they want to, but in the last three games, he is the only player in NFL history to have at least 10 catches, at least 100 yards receiving, and at least one touchdown in each of the last three games.
Yeah.
I didn't believe it. I went back and looked. Jerry Rice did not do that. 10 catches in three straight games, along with 100 yards or more in three straight games, along with a touchdown in each of those games at least. So, it's a convenient way to kind of cut the stats mm-hmm. to make him work in Keenan Allen's favor, but he is on fire.
He is having the greatest stretch of all time, but it's been 3 weeks. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Thank you, Steve.
Right. So,
I mean, I'm in here with two receivers right now. So,
yeah. So, yeah. Hey, it is true. You know, that's like saying a guy caught, you know, the league record. What is, I don't know what it is, 18 catches for 300 yards receiving, and that's, you know, that's. You stamp him as having the greatest run of all time.
Yeah,
it lasted about 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's like saying.
He is. He's playing great.
This is going to sound bad, but it's like saying, you know, I haven't had a drink since yesterday.
I gave up drinking.
Wow.
I gave up drinking yesterday.
I'm anticipating false on both of you guys here. Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. False. Fair enough.
He's not going to turn into Jerry Rice. It's his fifth year.
Yeah.
And so with five, finally, we get to see mm-hmm. this part of him. Yeah. So he is.
True or false, number three, the Silver Dome was built a little too well. For those that don't know, the Silver Dome was set for demolition late last week, and the first set of explosives and charges did nothing.
Didn't knock it over.
Of course, the contractor claims there was a wiring issue, so demolition attempt number two happened on Monday, and only the top ring came down.
I'll say this. True or false, was the Silver Dome built a little too well? It was designed very well, a little too well. It was planned horribly because it was a horrible football stadium.
Yeah.
I played in the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was built well, planned poorly.
Why would you say planned poorly?
Oh, my gosh.
Just the locker room?
It was an atrocity.
They had a Super Bowl
Hey, I know. They had a lot of great things there. They had Bob Seger concerts were there, man.
Bad Boys, Detroit
come on,
Pistons.
Man.
No, but was it built too well? I guess you can go true. I mean, It still hasn't fallen all the way down yet.
Right. I mean, even the second one only took the top ring down. I don't know if that was the plan. Maybe just do it a ring at a time. But
yeah, it was built well. They build those things to last forever. So
my thing was, who was the guy that had to go back in, recharge the thing up to blow it up again?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd want to walk in there. You know, right. I mean, that thing could come down at any time.
Right. You start hearing some rumbling.
Well, obviously not.
Well, you would say that, but you know, you just throw. Through 30 charges through that thing.
I don't know how much it cost them to blow it up like that, but wouldn't it be cheaper just to send a guy in there with a bulldozer and an excavator just to knock it over? I mean,
big old wrecking ball. You want to go old school with the wrecking ball.
Yeah, why do they need all this?
Because
they, you know, what are they making money off of dynamite these days? Or
yeah,
what's the
big
deal?
You know,
why do they have to knock everything over? It is more fun, I will say that. Unless you're the guy driving the bulldozer, then I think that's
unless you're the guy with the camera sitting behind a bus that pulls in front of
you. Oh, yeah, the Georgia Dome, yeah. This is still better than that, because that might be the worst of all time. That is
clearly
the funniest.
You can hear the cameraman.
Oh, boy, he's dropping bombs there.
Yeah, it was great.
That was great.
Yeah.
And I feel for that guy, too, because you know he set that camera shot up like 4 hours before it was supposed to happen.
And well, I don't know why he was sitting where he was, because there was all the. Why wasn't he across the street where those people were looking? Why didn't he put it there?
Well, he learned his lesson.
He gets what he deserves, basically.
Yeah, one job, and it was to get this shot.
He couldn't get up in a high spot.
He couldn't get one job done.
Listen, if a guy with the logo comes in, it was with CNN, wasn't it? Wasn't he with the Weather Channel? It was a
Weather Channel.
I'll say the Weather Channel. If somebody in the Weather Channel comes and say, listen, I'm the Weather Channel, they're going to blow the. And you got a high-rise apartment. Could I come in on your balcony and shoot this? Right. You say, come on in. You get someplace. You can't.
How do you go where everybody else is?
On a street corner, 2 miles away, looking on the wrong side of the street.
Yeah. Now the best
he
part
got of, what he deserved.
The best part about that footage, which goes largely overlooked, is if you ever get a chance to look at it again, is the bus driver is actually watching the implosion.
Oh, he stops
because
for it. Yeah.
I think it was a lady that was driving the bus. She pulls up. The camera guy's yelling at the bus to move, move, move. The bus driver's not even looking at
her. Yeah.
Because she's watching. She's like, oh, look at that. She's checking it out, too. And then as soon as it's done, all right, back on my route. Here we go, next stop.
It would have been funny if she turned and looked at him, and he's, like, yelling. And she's like, what? Look at what I'm watching. Like,
yeah. Yeah,
that's
a bad deal.
You had one job. You couldn't get that job done.
And there's no do-over there.
No do-over.
Unless it's the Silver Dome. So that'll do it for True and False. We will take a break. Steve, thanks for coming in as always.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Steve Tasker joining us here on the John Murphy Show. We will step aside. Donald and I will close things up on the other side. This is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, and the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. So, what have we learned today? Well, we learned that Kyle Williams has a certain appreciation for Bills fans.
Color Rush, fan appreciation's coming up. So, obviously, I think you guys have heard me talk about it at length. And if you've been around long enough, you know how much that, you know, I love our fans. And I think they're, you know, just vitally important to what we do. And I'm so appreciative of, you know, 12 years of here playing for these people, playing for this organization. So, obviously, fan appreciation's coming up. It, you know, means a lot. And we're going to be red on red on red.
Number two for what have we learned came from ESPN's Trey Wingo, who weighed in on the one-game suspension levied against New England Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski.
I don't think Gronk is a cheap player. I don't think that it's something he has no prior record of this, and he did apologize afterwards, and all that's great, but it doesn't take away from the severity of the action, which could have been devastating. It is devastating. He has a concussion. It could have been significantly more devastating to Tre'Davious White's future in the NFL. And it has to be eradicated. And those are the kind of things that the NFL is trying to take out of football.
And since that suspension came down, there have been subsequent suspensions, as Donald mentioned, from the Bengals and Steelers game, most of those, actually all of those, took place within the framework of the game,
right,
between the lines, where Gronk's did not, and yet the suspensions are equal in terms of length.
I mean, I just think that they kind of messed up on multiple fronts. They didn't eject him from the game, which is, I guess, on the refs. But then, you know, he gets suspended now for one game, and then Juju Smith-Schuster gets one game. You have the incidents from a few weeks ago, and those guys got, you know, one game. And then you look at Crabtree and Aqib Talib. They got two games for fighting, you know, and it was reduced to one game. So Gronk should at least got two games with the possibility to reduce it to one.
Yeah, I don't see how they're equal in any way, shape, or form. If there is any play that is remotely like the one that Gronk did on Sunday, it would be Mike Evans of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coming clean across the field to deck Marshawn Lattimore.
Right.
That's premeditated with malicious intent, much like that of Gronkowski on Sunday. That got a game, so that's probably the only reason that Gronk got a game. That's the only logical explanation that I can come up with as to why the league said, yeah, that's only one game also.
But to
equate those two, as Steve said when he joined us here on the show this hour, why they have those two things in the same category, it just doesn't make sense. They've got to separate those after the play, after the whistle, off the field, not within the framework of a game. It's got to be a different set of rules for those plays, and they should be more severely punished. That's going to do it for us here in this Tuesday edition of the John Murphy Show. Hopefully Murph got some good chicken soup, and he'll be back tomorrow. For Donald Jones, I'm Chris Brown. Thanks for watching. This has been the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.